mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, for the next hour, ladies and gentlemen, then we're going to get back into the kamikaze attack in Austin and what's really going on there. But for the next hour, former Congressman Traficant is our guest. James Traficant, we're very honored to have him with us. He, of course, ran in 1984 as a low-budget grassroots campaign for Congress, despite being outspent 7-1 by an incumbent Republican. Traficant won handily by 18,000 votes. He'd been reelected 7 times. In 2002, they set him up. It's completely transparent, just like with the governor of Alabama. That's now admitted. They had to release him from prison. It came out it was a complete fraud, a setup. They threatened to put somebody in prison that worked for him, and they didn't lie. Same thing with James Traficant. Mr. Traficant, great to have you here with us.
Well, glad to be on your show, Alex. You've got a great show. I'm sorry I haven't been there so far, but you've really educated the American people for sure.
Well, you've been in solitary confinement and in the concentration camp, so you couldn't come on, but it's great to have you here. Sir, break down what really happened to you for some out there that may not know and why it's so important.
Well, I think what's amazing about the whole ordeal was it was a $15 million investigation over a span of 6 years, over 250 agents, all on or about the time that the Trade Center and the Pentagon were being attacked. The bottom line is the government, and this is the issue now, Alex, that will be coming to bear. The government admitted at trial voluntarily that they made no audio or videotapes on me in 6 years. And the reason they did that, it's evident, is because they had no evidence of any crimes whatsoever. They had no evidence, physical evidence. They had 7 people who were pressured to lie. 4 of them already recanted that they were pressured to lie. And there's a young man in Nigeria who submitted an affidavit to the Nigerian government, his life was ruined because he wouldn't perjure himself in the Traficant case against Traficant for the government. So this thing is going to blow up. I think before it's over, I'm going to get some money out of this, and they're going to pay dearly. I've had it, and I think everybody in Austin is familiar with the term "I've had it" by now.
Well, since you brought that subject up to me when we went to break, what's your bottom line on the attack on the IRS building?
Well, you know, the IRS is become such an agency where they actually have testified, Alex, before Congress, that fear is what produces compliance, voluntary compliance by the American people. And without fear, there can be no collection of taxes. Now, to me, this is an absolute oxymoron in a free republic to hear a statement like that coming from an institution such as Internal Revenue Service. You know, my particular case is quite documented. I am the congressman that did change the burden of proof in the civil tax case. Before 1998, the taxpayer was guilty and had to prove himself innocent. I was able to change that in the 98 tax bill with the help of a Texan by the name of Bill Archer, the chairman of the Republican chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. And Bill Archer put my language in the conference committee, because the IRS had threatened a veto by President Clinton if it had the Traficant language. So I want to give tremendous credit in the state of Texas to that little man. And I think if George W. Bush would have made Bill Archer his Secretary of Treasury, this country wouldn't be in the fix it's in. But having said that, Alex, the results were dramatic. They did a study 1 year before the bill and 1 year after, and all of the variables dealt basically with the Traficant burden of proof language. Wage garnishment has dropped from $3.1 million to $560,000. Property liens dropped from $670,000 to $160,000. And individual family-owned homes seized by the IRS dropped from 10,000 to 70 to 57 homes, Alex, 57 in 50 states. We've got an agency that's out of control. One of my last bills was in tandem with 2 Republicans, one from Louisiana, Billy Tozan, and one from Colorado.
Congressman James Traficant, I hate to interrupt you. We've got to go to break, sir. I am going to skip the next break coming up so we have more time. Continue from there after this quick break. Stay with us.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
I have studied Governor Siegelman's case when it first happened, and he's been vindicated. It was a total setup. I have studied James Traficant's case. Absolutely set up. When they can persecute governors and congressmen and put them in prison for no reason and ruin them financially, when they can persecute a sitting governor or a sitting congressman, none of us are safe. Like they tortured Congressman Hansen. We, of course, came to his aid. This, they dieseled him till his feet exploded, driving him around for weeks, chained up. This is the type of Hanoi Hilton stuff that's going on. We're going to talk about what happened to Traficant in prison, why it was persecuted, the IRS, what he thinks of the event in Austin, what he's told me off air, if he wants to say that on air. Then we'll talk about who targeted him for persecution and why, and how he's going to be the comeback kid. And hopefully our listeners will support him. We're going to give you an address. He didn't ask for this. I did. I just got his address for people to send him, not campaign money. He's going to run again as an independent, but to get him back on his feet so he can, because they've ruined him and sucked his treasure out of him so he can't defend himself. If this ever happens to me, and unfortunately there's a good chance it will, when I get out of prison, I want people to support me. I'm ready. I understand what happens. Okay, going back to James Traficant. James, you got cut off by the break about how you were the number one true defender against the criminal IRS. Go ahead.
Well, Ali, first I want to say is I know you said that maybe one day when you're off the air, maybe you might have similar type of problems. And I want to say this may be maybe one of the best compliments you'll ever get. I think you would have deserved that because you would have drawn the ire of a government that is completely out of control. And I believe your voice is becoming that strong that, quite frankly, I'm going to give you a little bit of advice now. Be very careful and watch yourself because you are having that kind of an effect. And when people start and begin to have an effect, if it's not singing to the choir, it's a real problem. But having said that, we were talking before about the Internal Revenue Service. And I'm like everybody else in the country, seeing the headline news and the fiasco and the tragedy that struck Austin. But, you know, when you look at the Internal Revenue Service, they have evoked over the years fear and abuse. In fact, they've testified, Alex, before the Congress of the United States that without fear, they wouldn't have their voluntary, quote-unquote, voluntary compliance. Well, let me tell you something. Fear has no place in the Constitution of the United States or in the fabric of American government. And we've got a real problem. Now, in 1998, I was the individual responsible for changing the burden of proof in a civil tax case. As I said earlier, I want to tip my hat to a Texan, Mr. Bill Archer. Mr. Bill Archer was the Republican chairman of Ways and Means Committee, and the trafficking language was not in the bill, that reform bill, because the IRS had threatened a veto to President Clinton if it contained the trafficking language. Well, after the bill passed the House, I got a call from Chairman Archer, and he said, you know, we have so much support for your bill, that he said he was going to put it in the conference committee between the House and the Senate, and he did. And I honestly believe this, and I want the people of Texas who are listening to hear this, that I believe if President Bush would have named Bill Archer his Secretary of Treasury, America would not be in the fix it's in today. Now, having said that, what the trafficking bill basically said was this. Up until 98, Alex, you had an agency that says, Alex, you owe us $50,000. And you say, my God, how could I owe you $50,000? And they say, well, prove you don't, Alex. The burden of proof, you see, was on the taxpayer. The trafficking language changed that. And in 98, when a bill passed, they did a study 1 year after the passage of the bill, Alex, and they compared 1 year before the passage to 1 year after the passage. And there were three salient points of concern that were covered by their study. The first one was wage garnishment. When the burden of proof was on the taxpayer, there were 3.1 million Americans whose wages were garnished. The following year, with the burden of proof on the Internal Revenue Service, that dropped to 561,000, 3 million less, Alex. The second category was property liens. There were 670,000 the year before, 161,000 the year after. And the final category was individual family-owned homes that were seized, taken by the IRS. The year before, when the taxpayer had the burden of proof, it was 10,073. The year after, it was 57, Alex. One per state when they had to prove it. You see, one of the last measures that I had, and it really was upsetting, and Chairman Archer said he liked the bill. Well, I teamed up with two Republicans, Billy Tozan of Louisiana and Dan Schaefer of Colorado, and it was the flat tax, the fair tax, a straight consumption tax. And let me tell you something. It repeals the 16th Amendment and throws out the IRS. It abolishes all withholding, all debt taxes, all capital gains taxes, corporate taxes, individual tax on expenses for education, investment tax. And it's about time, Alex, and what everybody's saying, well, you're going to put a 25% consumption tax on us, Travigan, and you're going to bankrupt everybody with these cost increases. Listen to the study that was performed in Harvard. They said when you throw out this burdensome tax code that has destroyed companies and destroyed our competitiveness, they said they will have downward movement to gain market share. Sounds like capitalism all over again. And they predict that the prices would hardly raise, if at all. And you'll have Social Security fully funded, Medicare fully funded, and you'll have the same neutral, if not more, revenue stream than we have now. But the bottom line is, you see, Alex, it's time to reward work. Our tax code is basically a progressive communist tax code that was founded by Karl Marx. And here's how it works. The harder you work, the more you pay. The harder you work, you get hit over the head. We subsidize illegitimacy. We reward dependency. We kill investment. We chase companies overseas. These companies, they say they're not patriots because they left America. The reason they left is the tax code has made it impossible to make a profit in America. We've got to change it. Scrap it. Throw the Internal Revenue Service out. Abolish the withholding.
Absolutely.
And that's where we got to go, Alex. And let me say this briefly about this man in Texas. From what I understand, he was not a wacko. He had it. And there's so many people that had it, and it's not unusual to see him venting at the Internal Revenue Service. My God, Congress of the United States is derelict in their duties to not repeal the 16th Amendment, throw out individual personal tax, reward a man for his labor, not punish him. And that's where we got to go, Alex. That's exactly where we got to go.
Well, look at Geithner, and most of the White House don't pay their taxes, but then the news is saying, look at this tax cheat, Joe Stack. He's scum, but then the big boys, they don't even have to pay the tax.
Well, this is one of the problems. You have selective enforcement in all areas. First of all, we need a whole address to our central government. This is the United States of America, not the central government of America. And states, quite frankly, Alex, have become background music in a doctor's office. And I think one of the biggest mistakes ever made was the amendment to the Constitution that provided for popular votes for the U.S. Senate. I know this might sound different off the beat, but I just
No, we need the 17th Amendment back.
Here's what I'm saying.
We need to get rid of it.
In the old days, those two U.S. senators were beholden to the state legislature in the respective states. If they didn't do what the states wanted, they replaced them. Now you got these senators that are basically senators for America. We've lost states' rights. We've taken away. We've developed this big central powerful government that's molded us. My God, we got a tax code that's become a behavior modification for economic activity. This is crazy, Alex. And I think it's not rocket science. There can be tremendous changes here. And it's not change that's needed, it's replacement. And I think, and I will make this statement on your show. If the United States does not throw out the progressive income tax and replace it with a fair tax, America will implode similar to the Soviet Union. It's just a matter of time with that debt approaching $14 trillion. We can't satisfy. We're nothing more than a managed debt economy nation.
Congressman James Traficant, this is powerful information, but I also want to get into your persecution, why you were persecuted, who was behind it. Was it the Israeli lobby? Was it the IRS? Was it a combination? We're going to break that down and how if you can be persecuted like a heretic, this can happen to anybody. But finishing up with the whole income tax, they're raising all these other state taxes, local taxes, federal taxes, everything starting to go bankrupt. Foreign banks are openly looting us. Paulson can give $200 million of bailout money to himself and give himself a waiver, and then nobody even knows why James Traficant went to jail, completely made up. Same thing with governor in Alabama. I mean, this is amazing. But specifically, looking at this, how long do you think America has till it completely collapses if this out-of-control government continues?
I can't predict an exact time, but I will say this. I think it is inevitable, and I think it will be within the next generation, the next 20 to 25 years, where America will implode, and certain states will move towards saving their own revenue and moving off on their own, maybe a compact of states. I could see a state like Alaska with their own revenue stream bigger than most of the countries in landmass over in Europe saying, hey, we're on our own, guys. And I could see this starting to happen. I think Georgia legislature has advanced an initiative stating that they'll collect the federal tax, but they won't send it to Washington.
Yes, sir. Let me just add, Congressman Traficant, that 30-plus states are moving to declare Ninth and Tenth Amendment powers, as you know, and the federal government itself has been hijacked by offshore banks, and I think it's going to happen a lot sooner than just 20 years. And so NORTHCOM and Homeland Security, we got their internal Homeland Security documents a year ago. We broke this. We got it from law enforcement, where Homeland Security internally, they trained the police. This is really to suppress the American people. This is not about fighting Arabs in caves.
No doubt. I think the headline that all Americans may expect, I hope it doesn't happen, but God forbid it does, they'll wake up one morning and they'll hear conversation on your show, Alex, about the dollar crashing. And when that dollar crashes, you will see an implosion in America. You'll see civil uprisings. You will see a massive hemorrhage of the institutions of the United States of America. See, nobody believes this can happen. Everybody believes this is America. This is not going to happen. What people are failing to see is a tremendous
lose one.
With the federal government not basically meeting the needs of the American people. And having said that, you asked me earlier, you know, what really happened to me? You know, in 1983, I was the only American in history to defeat the Justice Department in a RICO trial, pro se, without being an attorney. I was targeted ever since. In the late 80s, I was instrumental in bringing back John Demjanjuk from Israel, who was on trial. He was already convicted and sentenced to be executed. No one would look into this man's case. I looked into his case, and I discovered and I was able to get documents from the Justice Department that not only proved he was innocent, Alex, but who Ivan the Terrible really was. It was so blatant in America, the pressure that Israel, through their lobby, had put on me and put on our government, that Congress wouldn't hold a hearing on my evidence, and the Sixth Circuit Court in Cincinnati wouldn't accept the trafficking evidence. I send it over to the Israeli Supreme Court. I did a live interview with Brian Gumbel on Today's Show by satellite from Jerusalem, and I basically said, they put this innocent man to death. Israel's going to lose upwards of $20 billion a year for the American taxpayers. And Brian Gumbel jumped in. He says, well, what do you mean? They only get $3 billion. I said, Brian, that's only foreign aid. No one's looking at loans converted to grants, economic assistance, military assistance. And I am telling you that the American taxpayer is shipping over $25,000 for every man, woman, and child in Israel every year. Well, I got a call the following night from the Supreme Court of Israel, and they said he'll be in Tel Aviv tomorrow night. Take him home. Here's a man on death row, Alex. But when that happened, I had a bullseye on my back like you couldn't believe. I had the IRS and the Justice Department already after me, and I had the most powerful lobby in America, a lobby that controls much of the foreign policy of the United States. Now, I'm being branded a bigot and an anti-Semite for saying it, but let me tell you something. There's only one entity that should control the Congress of the United States, and that's the American people. And people won't even whisper the truth about what's going on behind the scenes in Washington. The country's in a free fall, Alex. We're in trouble.
Well, I want to continue down this line because you had never been an enemy of Israel. You simply defended an innocent man, and even the Supreme Court looked at the evidence and let him go. And now they've grabbed him again and hauled him away. I mean, it's just a complete and total witch hunt. And now you have all these top professors coming out and pointing out that the Israeli lobby and Israeli newspapers brag that they control a lot of Congress. And you have Rahm Emanuel in the White House, who's an Israeli government agent, was in their military in the Gulf War. I mean, you're only saying what much of the evidence shows. And I've always read, and experts of history has shown, that when you do beat the Justice Department and they win, what, over 90% of their cases, they always come back. So was it the IRS that you exposed that got them first coming after you, and then the icing on the cake was then getting that innocent man freed?
I think it was a combination of all three. But just remember this. I was one of the most bitter enemies of the Justice Department, the Internal Revenue Service. And there's no kidding about that. And I had a struggle. It took me 12 years. And let me say this. I've been a Democrat all my life. The Democrats, I almost had a fist fight with Rostenkowski, Chairman Rostenkowski. Wouldn't even hold a hearing on my burden of proof legislation. We Republicans did come in, and I'll give credit to Bill Archer again. There's a man that looked at the American taxpayer, and he did something very significant. And I want to thank him on behalf of all Americans. I don't even know what happened to the old chairman. I hope he's still alive down there in Texas. He's a great man. But, Alex, I had a bullseye put on my back, but quite frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn. And here, if you're afraid to speak out about your own country, what has happened to our Constitution and our Bill of Rights? Why is everybody afraid to whisper what's going on? Listen to the strong statement I use on your show, even though it has labeled me and hurt me politically. Israel has a stranglehold in the United States of America. They have us in foreign wars we shouldn't be involved with that have bankrupted us. And they've gone so far as having Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon making a statement on Israeli radio October 3, 2001, the following. We, comma, the Jewish people, comma, control America, and the Americans know it. And never read that in a newspaper in this country. No one knows about it. So maybe Jim Traffic is going to be labeled. But I think if we've got a problem, let's straighten our country out. We don't have to hurt Israel. They are a friend. They're a democracy within a cluster of monarchs and dictators. But we don't have to prosecute their expansion plans. We don't have to get involved and be pushed into wars by Israel, manipulated by Israel. And we shouldn't answer to nobody but the American people.
Well, look at Ron Paul. I mean, he says cut off foreign aid to everybody. We are going bankrupt, and they call him an anti-Semite, though he wants to cut it off to Africa. He wants to cut it off to Egypt. He wants to cut it off to Iraq. We can't pay this bill anymore. And the fact that whenever somebody says, look, we need to stop being involved in all these wars, we need to stop doing this, and the ADL and Southern Poverty Law Center come out and attack me when I'm am mild on this, because I'm just trying to bring everybody together to audit the Fed, to get the Federal Reserve out of here, to get the 17th Amendment overturned, to get rid of the income tax. There's no doubt you get savaged when you even mildly criticize. So I can't imagine what it's been like for you. Let's briefly, because we're going to break here in about 4 minutes, talk about what happened to you in prison, because, I mean, you're a tough guy. You're not whining about it on air now, but they treated you like hell, I saw on the news.
Alex, the first place I went was 50% illegal immigrants. And keep this in mind for the people of Texas specifically. Jim Travigan was a congressman who passed on the House floor utilizing our soldiers on our border. You know, we're guarding the borders in the Mideast, we're guarding borders all over the world. Our troops are going for lunch over in Italy and going for the theater in Germany, and our borders are wide open. See, I was labeled a bigot because here's my position on immigration, Alex. Number one, let's put our troops on the border. It's a national security check line. And if you're in America illegally, you should be thrown the hell out, not given health care and given a false...
Well, that's what Mexico does to us. Mexico treats American citizens like trash and shakes them down.
Hey, listen. Here's the way I feel. If you're an American citizen, I don't care what ethnic group you are, you're one of us. But if you're not, you got to be thrown the hell out of here. Now, both these parties are catering to a growing minority Hispanic vote. It's getting larger in America. It is larger than the black vote. And both these parties are giving them everything they want. Meanwhile, you got a health care system out of control. You got approximately 15 million, truth be known, illegal immigrants consuming welfare and different programs in this country with falsified documents. And no one's, neither party's dealing with it.
Congressman, let me stop you. I got a guy that worked at Austin Energy here, and I already knew this. It's 800-plus sanctuary cities. But the illegals get a fake consular matricula. They pay a $200 down payment, or $250, depending on the size of the contract, to get their power and light turned on. Then they never pay the bill. He said over 90% of the time. And then a new matricula comes up in 6 months when they turn the power off. And they were told in Austin Energy meetings, let them not pay. And it's the same thing. Drunk drivers, they get let go. Everything. But citizens are scum and trash. And so the average illegal's on three or four different welfare lines.
Alex, it's so out of hand that it's a joke, and it takes me to the national health care bill. My God, America needs a health care bill, but there's deserving people need some assistance. But you've got about 15 million illegal immigrants that are going to be involved in this thing, and American people are bankrupted. We've already destroyed companies and thrown them out. That you've driven them away, we're going to destroy more. I don't think there's any common sense right now in Washington, and I think Washington is manipulated, and Washington is obstructed by outside forces and being very much manipulated. But having said that, let me get back to the prison. The first place I went to, Alex, had 50% illegal immigrants, and they knew that I was the guy that said, throw them the hell out. I slept with one eye open. The next thing you know, I'm at a medium high, which was known as Gladiator School up in Raybrook, people getting cut and hurt every particular day. There was a counselor in the system, I won't say where, that told me when I first went in. He said, listen, my mother's your biggest fan. Be careful. They want you to get hurt. The next thing you know, I'm at a medium high, and the truth be known, one more little infraction, I'd be at a penitentiary. A penitentiary. And the reason I end up in Rochester is they told me that I had a corkscrew aorta. And they told me I had this corkscrew aorta, and I would not take medication, Alex, because I didn't trust them. And I end up in Rochester, and then they said I didn't have a corkscrew aorta. Just let me tell you something. I believe that our government was hoping I would have died in prison and would not have come out.
Okay, Congressman, we got a break. Come back right there and continue with the saga of your years of imprisonment, and we will continue breaking down why you were persecuted and now your comeback kid status. We want today to get people to support you, get you back on your feet, and launch as an independent, because you certainly are. Ladies and gentlemen, get your pens and papers ready. I'm going to give you James Traficant's address if you want to support him. He's completely penniless after 7.5 years in prison, solitary confinement, you name it. Before we go back to him, we support the patriots out there, and we also need your support as this platform to try to get everybody's voices heard and out there. We sell a lot of great books and videos at InfoWars.com. This right now is our bestseller, Shadow Government, exposing the whole global police state grid they're putting in. We have this discounted at InfoWars.com. Jesse Ventura's new book, you get it discounted and a free video, free documentary film of your choice at InfoWars.com. Nobody else is offering this. Jesse Ventura, American Conspiracies, new book right now. How Weed Won the West, exposing government drug dealing and how they control the drug war. That DVD is now shipping that I'm in and consulted on. Available at InfoWars.com. Fall of the Republic, exposing how these big offshore banks control both parties. The Obama deception, all available at InfoWars.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139. If you want to support Mr. Traficant so he can get back on his feet and then get justice and go after the criminals that put him in prison. But that's how they bankrupt you so you can't defend yourself. It's 429 North Main Street. 429 North Main Street. And that's Poland, like the country. 429 North Main Street, Poland, Ohio, 44514. So here's the address again. 429 North Main Street, Poland, Ohio, 44514. And I've studied his case. I've also studied Governor Don Siegelman's case. And back at the time when they railroaded him, we looked at it and said, this is completely staged. Turned out U.S. prosecutors that worked for Karl Rove, he ordered it. They've testified to this now. Get him. They kept coming after him, investigation after investigation, all made up, lying. Then they threatened to indict one of his employees for something totally separate outside the Capitol and said, lie about him. We won't send you to prison. Basically, same thing happened to Mr. Traficant, Don Siegelman. Now, he got out after 9 months and has been vindicated, and it's admitted it was a fraud. He was going to serve a decade. Not with Traficant. He was there 7.5 years, and they told him, and he'll talk about this in a moment, anytime you say you're guilty, we'll let you go. Now, so first they try to pull some medical scams on him. They put him in with the illegal aliens. They put him into Gladiator School. medium, maximum security, high security. Continue, Congressman Traficant, with what happened to you in prison.
Well, at some particular point, you know, you made the statement that you have to stand on your own 2 feet and you have to be prepared for almost anything. And I had an awful lot of enemies in the prison system, and I didn't know exactly who or how someone might come at you. So you sleep with one eye open, Alex. But the bottom line was that I not only did that, that I developed what I consider to be a firm resolve. And one thing Nelson Mandela said, you never really know a country unless you go through their prison system. And that's one thing he was exactly right about. You see the other side of the United States of America. We've got such crippling problems. But I survived. I was not afraid to survive. I told them where they could shove that pardon, because I certainly wasn't going to admit to something that I didn't do. But what very few people know is that before that trial, the Northern District Court, federal court system of Ohio, passed a rule that if you got a judge from a particular area, you got a jury from that area. And it would become the Traficant rule, because basically nobody in my congressional district was eligible to serve on my jury. Second of all, the judge made my witnesses testify in open court under the threat of perjury to her outside the presence of a jury, and they told her the truth. No one was charged for perjury, but she did not allow them to testify to the jury. And four of those people said that of the seven people who testified against me, they had admitted to somebody close or whomever who had confided in me that they lied so they wouldn't go to prison himself or have their wife indicted or their kids indicted or their company taken away, et cetera, et cetera. Four of the seven, she didn't allow it to go to the jury. Now we find out after the trial was over, one of the key witnesses against me, who was perjured himself in my trial because he was caught perjuring himself in a previous trial, that the judge's husband had a relationship business-wise with that family. I mean, this thing, it was so abusive. It speaks out, but when you're the number one target of the Justice Department, the number one target of the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, Alex, you have nowhere to turn. You got to stand on your own 2 feet and hopefully outlive it and come back and try and do what you can about it.
Now, Congressman, let's break this down, though. The type of threats you got when you were in Congress and how you got set up. There's this crisis of confidence now because police all over the country, in every major city of Texas, just as an example, have been caught planting drugs on people to take their property. It's now standard procedure. They admit they have informants lie on the stand about political enemies they have. I mean, they can put anybody they want in prison, but the public now knows it's a fraud. It's like the death penalty. I'm for the death penalty at a grassroots level if they catch somebody who's murdered a kid. The problem is more than a third of those on death row, it's been proven with DNA, are totally innocent. We know that the system is so corrupt you can't trust anything they say or do. So briefly, because I remember seeing it in the news, the hell in the 7.5 years, I know as a man you don't like to talk about what happened to you. You just want to be tough and ignore it. But people need to know the type of persecution. I mean, tell us more of what happened in prison.
Well, you're under constant threat. With me, I did months and months after end in the hole in isolation because they said my attitude. But basically, they were trying to break me. And I survived all that time in prison. I never even acknowledged the presence of any of the wardens. I couldn't tell you their names. I just kept them.
Hold on a minute. Let's go back over this. So explain it. They said some little punk jail guard, some sadist, has this congressman, this icon, and they're telling you, I don't like your attitude, boy. You're going to spend how long in the hole?
Well, they find out or use little maneuvers that they have. But I believe I spent close to 7 months in the hole over a period of time. And that's in the hole means that you get a shower every second day, three times a week. You get to go out one day, 1 hour a day. And I tell you the truth, Alex, I never left the place. I became very hardened. I think that they looked at me and they said, this guy is very hard, because I didn't give a damn about anything. I forfeited my life. If I survived, I'd do what I had to do. But I wasn't going to buckle down. I wasn't going to be intimidated. Stood my ground, did what I had to do. But like I said, I could have had a pardon. But there's no way I was going to make admissions to something that I didn't do. And I want all your listeners to listen to this very carefully. 6-year investigation, $15 million, over 250 agents. And they said they didn't make any tapes on Jim Traficant. Didn't bug my telephone. Now now a Secret Service agent has come out, retired, Mike Robertson, and made the following statement. He said trafficking was certainly railroaded. He said they had no physical evidence. He said they bugged that guy to death. They had people go to him with body mics. He said anybody in their right mind knows that. He said the reason the government voluntarily made that admission in court is because trafficking could have subpoenaed all of their tapes and said, where's the crime? Now, I want your listeners to remember this. They said they made no tapes, didn't bug my telephone or anything for 6 years. Now, if you believe that, I got some property down in Florida I think somebody wants to sell you.
Well, sir, you've been vindicated, and that's all over the press. I mean, you have officially been vindicated like Governor Siegelman, but he only got 9 months. You got 7.5 years and got financially ruined. How are you going to come back at him? I mean, you now have the Secret Service agent. You have all these other witnesses against you recanting that it was done under pressure. You've got to get on the attack, in my estimation, or correct me if I'm wrong, or they're going to try to set you up again.
Here's where we are, Alex. Right now, there's a man in Washington, D.C. that was pressured to lie against me. He's a brilliant man, Richard Detour. He could fly any aircraft, and he's a brilliant engineer. And the government wanted him to be a witness against me because he was very intelligent, very credible. And they wanted him to say that he saw a businessman give me an envelope with money, thousands of dollars, in my office. And he basically said, I won't do that. I know, Jim, if he's done something wrong, go after him, but I'm not going to lie. They come back to him later, and they pressured him to say that he was standing outside the door, and he heard the transaction. He said, I just won't do it. Now, his attorney that he had was a former U.S. attorney who was pressuring him along with the government. So he fired that attorney, and they indicted him to keep him out of my case. The bottom line is, here's how egregious it was. When they brought the witness to testify against me in trial, he stated that he gave me the money in an automobile in Youngstown, Ohio. But the government is clearly on record now, clearly on record, is trying to pressure Richard Detour to say that he saw the transaction in my office. And it was the prosecutor who was doing this. By the way, the prosecutor is now working for some insurance company in Columbus, Ohio, and everybody's scared to death of what happened because they know that I'm not afraid to speak my mind.
Well, let's stop there for a second, former Congressman James Traficant. I'm sure you're aware of Don Siegelman's case. It's even 60 Minutes reported it was all a stage deal. The majority of these former state attorneys, U.S. attorneys, came out and said it was a fraud. A bunch of Republicans came to his aid, even though he's a Democrat. They, it's now admitted, ordered one of his aides to lie and say he saw the check, the same thing, and it turned out that was a complete lie. So this is, and it's now been confirmed, Karl Rove ordered this. I mean, do you know specifically in the U.S. Attorney's Office who gave the orders to set you up?
Yes, I do. I don't know who exactly did it, but it was supervised by Michael Chertoff, who they rewarded him, making him head of Homeland Security. It was over, and they made the prosecutor in my case number two man in the Justice Department, right underneath Gonzalez. He was Deputy Attorney General there until this thing hit with the fellow in Nigeria, and now the fellow in Washington, D.C., who spent $1.5 million, he was acquitted in about 45 minutes because his attorney called him and pressured him, his own attorney, trying to encourage him to lie for the U.S. government against me. And what he did is he had a retired Navy captain who worked with him listening on the other end of the phone, and he did then went ahead and did an affidavit. If you read the affidavit, you'd get sick to your stomach, Alex. Terms like this, there's no reward for honesty, Richard. They're going to get this guy. Why throw yourself in the mix? You didn't do anything. They'll have to indict you or do something to you. So just go ahead and tell them what they want to hear. They're going to get trafficking. Just go ahead and do what they want, Richard. This is what I'm up against. Now, let me tell you what. Here's the difference between me and Siegelman. 60 Minutes come in and did a story on Siegelman. I'm going to tell it right the way it is. When you're the number one target of the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, 60 Minutes don't have anything good to say about you. Now, that's putting a hay where the goats can reach it, Alex.
Well, let's talk more about that. Were you
that's
warned when you...
If I didn't have this powerful Jewish animus against me, I think I'd be a very rich man for what they did. But I'm still the top target of Israel. Quite frankly, I think they're delaying that trial over there in Germany because they do not want me to testify over there in Germany. They're hoping that old man will die in Germany.
Well, let's expand on this Israel situation. Let's go through from the start. When did you first get on the Israeli lobby's radar? Were there back channel threats to you in Congress? You know, did they warn you to back off first? What happened?
Well, first of all, right when I was running, they tried to get me $10,000 cash. And I told them, you keep your money and I'll keep my vote. So I think I was targeted before I ever walked down there. Second of all, I tried to cut foreign aid every year for everybody. I was asked a couple times to exempt Israel, and I said I wouldn't do that, and I never could pass any cuts. I worked hard to try, and, you know, we have people sleeping on still grates, and we're sending money overseas. Don't make much sense to me. But finally, it became that Demenia case. I was called a Nazi supporter. I suffered great...
How did you get involved in the case?
They came to me, Alex, because they knew, they were from Cleveland, they knew the government hated me, and they came to me last. They said no one would even talk with them. In fact, I was in my office overhearing the conversation outside, and they said, we come to Jim last because no one will talk to us, and we didn't want to come to Jim. We know the government hates them, but we have no one to look into our plight. And he says, you know, and I never forget the son. I heard the son say, look, I never had a speeding ticket. I can't talk to an elected representative. My father's not asking to talk to him. I'm asking, what the hell's going on here? I said, send that young man in to me. When I did that, Alex, my staff told me almost verbatim, if you get involved in this case, you are finished as a congressman. You're already on the hit list for your cutting foreign aid. You get involved with this case. Now, what the newspaper didn't print, they all printed Travagant supports Nazi mass murderer. What they didn't print was what I told the family. When they come in, I said, look, your father's been convicted of mass murder. If he is guilty, I could truly go over and pull the switch. But I believe you should be able to at least state your case to somebody in government, and it should have been your own congressman, your own senators. They said no one would talk to them. I got involved, and what I found out, Alex, that he was not Ivan.
Well, let me stop you. Think about this. You're a congressman. This guy is supposedly a kangaroo court convicted Nazi. And, of course, the Supreme Court of Israel said, actually, it's the wrong guy. It agreed with you. So why would you get into something this dangerous unless you had a sense of justice? So you began to look at the case. What was there?
Well, I was known in Congress for taking a look at things objectively, and people were not afraid to confide in me. Before long, I started to get whistleblower activity. And the whistleblower type of things I got led me to certain conclusions. And I moved with a Freedom of Information Act request on Demenyuk, and they just kept throwing it in File 13 and saying, classified, classified, classified. And what I did is basically tricked them, Alex. I started to look around and I researched, was there ever anybody tried for war crimes who was located at that Treblinka Poland concentration camp? And there was a man from Chicago, a Ukrainian, who... ended up coming to the Chicago area by the name of Fyodor Fedorenko. He was tried for war crimes in America at Treblinka and was acquitted in America. Alex, he then went to visit his family in the Ukraine, relieved of all the pressure. He was picked up by the KGB, tried over there, and executed. What I did is I submitted a Freedom of Information Act request on Fedorenko. And with that, I got documents from the State Department.
And he looked just like the other guy.
Yeah. Well, no, I got the documents I got from the State Department was in response to a request for information from one of our agents, Justice Department agents, over in Germany years ago, maybe 25 years ago. And it had on the bottom, Alex, it said they had another 100 pages in the file. I immediately got on the phone, and I called and got a Mrs. Poindexter, because they took all my files and everything. And I said, this man's been dead for a number of years, it's not classified, I want those 100 pages. And that woman sent them to me. And Alex, when it come over, it had testimony of trials of everybody who identified Ivan the Terrible as a man named Ivan Marchenko. But the big thing was there was a photograph in there of two Nazis. And the guy identified the photograph as follows. He said, the small man on the right is Takchuk with the pistol. The tall man on the left is Ivan Grozny, the man the Jewish prisoners feared the most, Ivan Marchenko. Now, I had this, and I went on a house floor, and I said, Ivan the Terrible is a man named Ivan Marchenko. And when did you ever hear the Justice Department make a response? That night they put out a press release.
His name is even Ivan, and the only thing is he looked a little similar to the guy living in Ohio.
Not really.
Yeah.
When you hear this, the Justice Department went public and said there were two Ivan. Now, you know what I said? I said, you sure there wasn't a swing shift? And then I showed the photograph. When that happened, everything went underground. The Justice Department shut up. Next thing you know, I'm over in Israel. And I think it became a real issue. And I got to give credit to the Israeli Supreme Court. The Israeli Supreme Court looked at the evidence that take this man home.
But see, that's the issue, is the Israeli Supreme Court says he's innocent. You have the secret files. It proves it. Meanwhile, the American Israeli groups after you. Stay there, Congressman. This is amazing information. James Traffic. Chapman, the international forecaster, is coming up at the 8 after next hour. Former Congressman James Traficant will be with us another 5 minutes in the next hour, and he says he wants to come back. We really appreciate his courage. I've studied him. I've looked at what he's done. I looked at why he took the case of this supposed camp guard. Turned out it was just all lies. And the government knows that. The Israeli Supreme Court ruled that. Why did the Israelis tell the truth about this, but then in America, the Israeli lobby came after you? Is it two different groups or one different group? Or I mean, you were telling me during the break you think this is all going to hurt Israel and that's not what you want?
No, absolutely not. I think I've been branded as anti-Semite, and quite frankly, I am a supporter of Israel. A supporter of Israel when they're doing what's right. When they do something wrong, I'm not going to be remiss here and not mention it. I believe that they have undue control of our government. But I'd like to say this to start with. The Israeli Supreme Court gave a lesson in justice to the United States of America. This was the most controversial case, perhaps, in Israeli history, one of them. And they looked at the evidence, Alex, and they said, take him home. Now, what everybody doesn't know, Alex, is that our government went back and wanted Israel to prosecute Demjanjuk again on this other charge. And the Israeli Supreme Court would not allow it. So let's give kudos where it's due. Let's give it to Israel and their Supreme Court.
Now, okay, so then, how does the Supreme Court of Israel agree with you and the government files that prove it 100%? Why is AIPAC putting you in prison?
Well, I think it's once you're targeted, and they fired a woman in 1990 or 1991. I don't know if you remember this, Alex. A top-ranking woman. Politicians that they wanted to get rid of, and Jim Trafficking was the number one target in the world. And I think it was because the way I handled that case, no one would help me. And I went to the House floor, and I dramatically presented the case on behalf of Demjanjuk and his family. And I believe that I riled up many, many of the people, whether they felt that just the fact that I looked into this case, that no one should look into it. I had to have some anti-Semite blood. This is what they said.
And now Germany's hauled this guy off. He's on the death's doorstep.
Yeah, I think they're holding and delaying this because I firmly believe that they do not want me over in Germany to speak out on this issue. I think they're holding this case up, holding that the old man will die over there. But what a shame. He was not guilty, Alex. Bottom line, and let me say this, when you allow one citizen's rights to be trampled, you endanger the rights of all Americans. And what the hell's wrong with us? What have we come to? What have we turned into here, Alex?
Well, that's why I support you, because, I mean, I looked at the facts, and you've been persecuted a lot worse than Siegelman, and he's been vindicated. You've been vindicated as well, but not what comes next? I mean, how do you go after these guys? Do you sue people? Do you call for new investigations? What do you do?
I really don't have any strength to do that, but this fellow in Washington, D.C., this Richard Detour, may file suit. If he does, I will then back up into that suit as well, and it's going to be a long, hard struggle. But I think that there's so many revelations to do that it's going to surprise an awful lot of people. But right now, I'm looking politically. I'm looking at politically not just for vengeance, but looking politically because I think America needs somebody to speak out on what the hell's going wrong, who's not afraid to speak out, who's not controlled by their party. I think too many of the politicians today have allegiance to the party, the allegiance to be to the American
people. And so you're planning to run as an independent. Give us the battle plan.
I'm going to run as independent, and this is a Democrat area. My chances aren't great, I'll be quite honest, as an independent. But I just don't see, I can't see anybody following Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid into battle. And Bobby Dam, beam me up if I'm going to be involved in that party.
But I mean, why not use the machinery like Ron Paul does and use their machinery? You would still be an independent.
It would be impossible for me to do that. I would be so castigated here. I have to basically run as an independent. It'd be hypocritical for me to run now as a Democrat with the position that I've taken.
Okay, we got a break. 1 minute, sir. Stay there.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, he doesn't do a lot of interviews. He did a big one on Fox News, as you know, a while back. It sent shockwaves across the country. But he's been on with us for an hour, and he says he'll come back soon. We're very thankful. James Traficant, I was asking you during that one-minute break, former congressman, other key points, and you brought up the fact that you have people in Washington that are telling you are being watched, and that there was a big secret investigation about the Denomic case, but it was about how did Traficant get the info?
Yes, when I brought him home, the big investigation didn't center about how they suborned perjury to ruin this man's life, and this was a capital offense. He's going to be put to death, Alex. It wasn't about how they withheld evidence, about how they violated civil rights. It was how did Traficant get this information? Imagine that, folks. I mean, it's unbelievable that some of the things you hear. So I just worked very hard. I just put my nose to the grindstone and kept going, and that's about it. That's all you can do, Alex. But I'll tell you something. We've got a real problem. No one should fear our government. The government, if anybody, they should be fearing the American people. American people are the government. And we've got this thing so convoluted and messed up. It's really a crying shame, and it's got to be changed.
We also need to thank your wife in all of this, Patricia Traficant. She stood beside you. You stood beside her, and for better and worse. And people, if they do write checks to try to get you guys back on your feet to the address, they need to address those. You were telling me to Patricia Traficant, 429 North Main Street, Poland, Ohio, 44514. Congressman, we've got about 3 minutes left, and you were going to give me a liner for the show about...
Well, you know, Alex, I've gotten volumes of mail all through the 7.5 years, and one of the reasons I got them is people followed my little one-minute speeches. And I just didn't do them in the grandstand. I made salient points during that time and dramatized things that I think had to be made. But I became known for the statement, beam me up. And basically, I just said, beam me up because there's no intelligent life here. But here's what I'd like to say to the Alex Jones Show. You don't need to be beamed up. Jim Traficant doesn't need to be beamed up on Alex Jones Show because there is an intelligent audience there. And there is a message coming out that's educating that audience. And believe me when I say this, if more people were listening to Alex and could listen to Alex, I think you'd see a direct and intended change as some of these misdirected policies that are coming out of Washington, so misdirected and absurd that if you threw them at the ground, they'd probably miss. So there's no need to beam me up here in Austin, Texas. There's intelligent life in Austin, Texas. And before I leave again, I want to say, I don't know what happened to Chairman Archer, Bill Archer, but Alex, I want you to run him down. I want you to find him, and I want you to say that Jim Traficant said thank you on behalf of the American people.
Absolutely. We've got about a minute left here. What's the time frame for the election for people to start getting behind you in Ohio?
Well, this means I'll be on the ballot in the November election, but I have to get signatures signed. I have to get petitions signed up until May the 3rd. I need a couple thousand signatures here, and it's going to be an uphill struggle. I'm not supported by any newspaper, any political party, any entity of anything, and it's an uphill struggle. But you know what? I've had it, and maybe get back to where we started.
Well, the first thing we need, and we're going to get some domains and just give them to you to make sure whoever the volunteer is doesn't just get a domain and keep it. We've already grabbed some domains. We're going to give them to you. You need to get a volunteer to build you a nice website with PayPal buttons, the rest of it. Get everybody doing these petitions now because we do need you in Congress to counterbalance all the offshore corporate forces and others that are doing this. And thank you so much, former Congressman James Traficant, for your courage. And we're all praying for you. And we're glad they weren't able to kill you or break your will in prison. And it seems you've come out even stronger on the other side.
Well, Alex, thank you for having me on your show. You've got a great show. You get a great message to the people. I think if I could leave anything there, I'd just say tune in to Alex's show, and I hope you get more coverage around the country. I think they need to hear a rational voice like yours. So thanks for having me, Alex, and good luck. Beam me up, but you don't need it down there in Texas.
Thank you.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We are live now, 8 minutes into the second hour on this 25th day of February, 2010. It is Thursday. Websites are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. For the rest of the hour, we are joined by attorney Philip J. Berg, a former deputy attorney general of Pennsylvania, former candidate for governor of the U.S. Senate in Democratic primaries, former chair of the Democratic Party in Montgomery County, former member of the Democratic State Committee, and attorney with offices in Montgomery County, PA, and an active practice in Philadelphia, PA. Phil is a paid life member of the NAACP and voluntary fire police for 27 years. His website is ObamaCrimes.com. And we've had Jerome Corsi on about this day one, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now. But the first person to really research this, because he was concerned about it back when it was in the Democratic primaries, I guess almost 2 years ago, almost two years ago, was Phil Berg. And he just asked the question. I mean, we know this guy's name was Barry Sitaro. We know he lived in foreign countries. We know he went to madrasas. We're not saying that's a bad thing to go to madrasas. The point is, the media would say it's a wild conspiracy theory. His name wasn't Barry Sitaro. Then they sealed all his records. No, his name was Barry Sitaro. That's now admitted. The point is, they're lying about things that are admitted. Then we got a certificate of a birth certificate. But more and more, and this is what I've always focused on, it's the fake names. And it's being adopted in Indonesia because there's only a few countries like England and Israel and a few others where you can have dual citizenship and still be allowed to be a U.S. citizen, much less the president. And now Glenn Beck is attacking Berg every week. And again, I'm tired of going after Glenn Beck. It's just he was in the news saying global warming was real in USA Today Sunday on the weekend edition. I've seen him put Phil Berg next to Van Jones and then next to Deborah Medina and say all these people are bad. I mean, just incredible behavior. So that tells me they're desperate if now mainline talk show hosts, not just Beck, but other big Republicans, are attacking Phil Berg. In my experience, Phil Berg is somebody who wants the truth. Yes, he called for an investigation of 9/11 and the deadly dust, just like six of the 10 commissioner members did. So he gets demonized for that. And they say, oh, well, he was supporting Hillary's why he did this. This is Beck. No, he did this because he was concerned with the Democratic Party. He's a Democrat. And I now, from the preponderance of evidence, it's 60-40. It's leaning towards him really not being eligible. And then you get into the math of it. And I know there's big new developments, but I want Phil, for new listeners and people that aren't really understanding this and just seen the media's kind of boil down, deceptive boil down of what's happening and who birthers are, to talk to the father of the birther movement and you know, recap the history of this. But they are acting very, very suspicious now. They're getting desperate. Beck says 5% of conservatives are birthers. I've seen polls of 57% of registered Republicans questioning his birth. In fact, search engine that for folks, for the TV audience. Majority of conservatives question Obama's birth certificate. And I've seen that headline everywhere. I mean, here's one LA Times today. Arizona House panel approves bill requiring presidential candidates to show birth certificates. Nearly half of the Arizona legislator wants to force President Barack Obama to show his birth certificate to state officials if he runs for re-election. A state House committee on Tuesday approved the measure, sponsored 40 of the state's 90 legislatures. It would require the presidential candidates who want to appear on the ballot in Arizona to submit documents proving that they meet the requirements to be president. And it goes on, bill requiring citizenship proof for president contenders passes House committee. And it passed in a 6-1 vote. So 6-1. So it's a deception to say 5% of America are truthers and 5% are birthers, and to say birthers are dangerous, bad people. That's a Glenn Beck quote. I mean, that's political suicide. I, I think that hurt him more and why he's lost 12% of his audience, according to Nielsen, in the last 3 weeks, than just demonizing and setting up Deborah Medina in Texas. I believe he lost a lot of his viewers over the birther issue. Now, I'm going to shut up. I've kind of laid some of the background and groundwork here. Phil Berg wants to talk about the absolute proof that he is an Indonesian citizen. His name's Barry Sitaro. So his name's even fake, folks. That's confirmed. The president has an alias. And it's one thing if you're a talk radio host and have an alias or a movie star or something. My name's really Alex Jones. But a lot of times when people do have aliases, I know some here locally, it's because they have criminal histories. Okay? And, again, his records are all sealed. To break it all down is attorney Phil Berg. Phil, thanks for being here with us.
Alex, a pleasure to be on with you again. And you have great listeners out there. And I think we're really getting to Obama. Significant for everyone. And first off, real quick, my background. Lifelong Democrat, candidate for governor in the United States Senate in the Democratic primaries in Pennsylvania and many others, which they can find out on my website, ObamaCrimes.com. Lifelong Democrat. And also then they throw at me I'm a racist. Well, I happen to be a paid-to-play from the NAACP, so I'm not a racist. I just believe we should have, you know, equal rights in this country. The rights given to us through our Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights. And what we have here is, real quick, is everyone knows that Arnold Schwarzenegger, people have talked to him about him running for president for the last 10 or 15 years, and he constantly says then amend the Constitution because he admits he's from Austria and he admits he doesn't fulfill the requirements. The requirements for president under our U.S. Constitution are simple. Number one, you're 35 years of age. Number two, you lived in this country for 14 years. And number three, you'd be a natural-born citizen. Arnold Schwarzenegger acknowledges he's not. Obama doesn't say anything directly, but by not saying it, he's walking all over the Constitution. He's saying, I don't care about the Constitution. As Alex, you just said, all his records are sealed. We really know nothing about this individual. It's really outrageous that here we are 13 months after he's sworn into office that we still don't know anything. But this is significant, and I think we're making headway. I'll tell you why. First off, Nixon went down, everyone, not on the Watergate break-in. He went down on the cover-up. But we now have Obama in office 13 months, and it's a cover-up. Significant, I put out a press release 2 weeks ago calling for a birth certificate march on Washington. We don't have the date yet. As soon as we set the date, we'll have it on our website now, so I'll call you so we can talk about it on air. But significant was the next day was the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C. And at the end of the breakfast, Obama spoke, and he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but the exact words are on my website. At the end of it, he said, no one should question my faith. And then he paused, and he said, or my citizenship. I really think we're cracking. I think we're really getting to Obama or the people around him, because many times, and I'm sure I said on your show before, but I'll reiterate, when all is said and done, Barack Obama, actually his real name is Barry Sitaro, we'll go into that, Michelle Obama, Howard Dean, the former head of the Democratic National Committee, other officials of the Democratic National Committee, senior campaign officials, and now senior administration officials who know that he's a phony and a fraud, should be brought into our criminal justice system and should be tried. Those convicted should go to jail. And Obama should go to jail, and also he should be deported. The reason I'm mentioning that is, and I'm going to be putting out a press release shortly on this. I drafted it months ago, but this, the timing's right. What we need is a deep throat. We need the deep throat regarding Obama, because that's what broke it with the Watergate. Because, and I think it's going to happen because we're now, with Hill saying, don't question my citizenship, and Glenn Beck now going to town, I don't know about this week, last week, I know he spoke about me 3 days. He had my picture up on his blackboard. I tried to confront him this. I couldn't get to him this past Saturday. I was in Washington, D.C. at the CPAC convention, 210, which is basically all the conservatives in the country. He was a keynote speaker at the end, but I couldn't get to him. I gave something to one of his aides. I'm sure he won't respond. I challenge him on your show right here. I challenge Glenn Beck to a debate anytime.
Well, Dummy, did you see the video where he pointed at you and said, these people hate America?
No, I haven't seen that. I have to see that because I want to see what he's saying, because what he's doing is he's on the verge of bringing out the crazies to come after me. And I have always called for one thing. He called me an obstructionist, I know. I have always called for a peaceful revolution. I don't want anything to happen to Obama. I don't want to turn him into a martyr. There's some other people out there are talking about different things. I want a peaceful revolution. Our march in Washington is going to be peaceful.
Notice Beck keeps saying that's what he does. He puts your picture up and Van Jones, and then points in your direction and says, these people hate America, these birthers, these truthers, they want to hurt you, President. They don't let them be in your administration. They'll kill you. No, he said that literally scores of times. So he's invoking this idea of violence, very dangerous.
It is dangerous, and if you can get me the actual clip on that, because if he said that, I'm going to ask for a retraction, and if he won't retract it, I'm going to sue him, because that's what's dangerous right now. If everyone's looked at what I've been doing, this is now my 19th month doing this. I've always called for peaceful revolution. I've called for doing this through the legal system, and since the legal system is so slow, we're going to have this birth certificate march in Washington, probably late May, early June, and we're getting a fabulous response all across this country, because every one of your listeners can identify with a birth certificate, because they must show a birth certificate between 1 and 10 times in their lifetime. Everyone needs it for a passport. Everyone needs it to register for Little League. You need it for different things, for marriage, or you need it for scholarships or college or school. The best one, you're down there in Texas. A woman sent me an email a while back from Texas, and she said, I registered my nephew for school. At the end of the registration, my nephew said to the principal, can I ask you a question? Principal said, sure. He said, how come I had to show my birth certificate to register for school, but Obama didn't have to show it to become president? And that says it all when a 13-year-old can identify with it.
And then they lie and say he's shown his birth certificate. He hasn't.
Well, no, he hasn't. And you get people who look like fools, like Chris Matthews, shaking a piece of paper saying this is his birth certificate. No one has seen the birth certificate. What people have seen is not even a for real document, because at the bottom of the document it says if there's any alteration, it's invalid. What people have seen is a certification of live birth, which was even forged. And that was put on their campaign website.
All right, stay there. Stay there, Phil. I want to come back and recap, though, and get into the Indonesian situation, the Barry Sotero, who this guy really is. Because the birth certificate's only part of it. Scared when they've got Republicans attacking the birthers, and you've got legislatures passing or in the process of passing laws, and the states do run the federal government, saying you want to be on the ballot here, you got to show your birth certificate. Now let's shift gears, to the key here, and it's the fact that his real name is Barry Sotero. He became an Indonesian citizen. He got adopted by a foreign family, and you talk about this. And the mainstream media says that's a lie when that's on record, Phil Berg.
Absolutely. The key really, the bloggers on the internet, they try to say they saw a birth certificate, everything. We fight back and forth. But we raised the issue then. We shifted it. The issue really is, everyone out there, the fact that he was adopted or even acknowledged in Indonesia. In his books, he's sort of bound by certain things. Number one, in one of his books, he says he found his birth certificate. So it's baloney that he can't produce it. The reason he can't produce it will show that he was born in Kenya. But the second thing in his book, he says his parents had been divorced. He says, my stepfather, Lolo Sotoro, returned to Indonesia before my mother and I. Well, that's significant because in the 1960s, Indonesia was at war. The only ones who could go to school there were those that were natural of Indonesia. He became natural because he was adopted or acknowledged. We have his school record on our website. His school record indicates his name is Barry Sotoro, S-O-E-T-O-R-O. His nationality is Indonesia, and his religion is Islam. Ladies and gentlemen, if he hasn't legally changed his name, his name is his adopted name, Barry Sotoro. That is his name.
And that's what it was in college, and that's why it's all sealed.
That's right. That's why he's sealed. Well, I also think he sealed his records because I think it'll show he applied for and received foreign aid. Obama is the biggest hoax in the history of our country in over 230 years. He's a phony. He's a fraud. I'm not mentioning words here. I've been saying this, and I need the American support behind me. Follow me on ObamaCrimes.com. We're going to have a march on birth certificate march in Washington. Everyone bring a copy of your birth certificate, and we're going to demand that either he produced that he showed that he's constitutionally qualified, or we're going to ask him, demand that he resign, because Congress won't do anything right now. Congress should be impeached. This is a disaster what they have done and allowed. We're in a constitutional crisis, because once we get past that, who becomes president? That's a whole new issue, another whole...
Well, let me just throw this in for you before we go to break in a long segment, time to flesh this out. He says he's going to sign executive orders on the carbon taxes, doesn't care what the Congress says. They stonewalled ClimateGate, said it didn't exist. That blew up in their face. I mean, it shows this is the most lying administration we've ever seen, worse than Nixon, worse than Clinton, worse than Bush. He said no lobbyist. All he hired was lobbyists. He said not going to expand wars, expanded the wars. He said no signing statements, went back on that. I mean, this guy is continuing and expanding torture. I mean, this guy is a complete and total fraud. And from your deep research, lay it out, looking at this, what is Obama's real story?
Well, his real story, he's a phony. I mean, he's not constitutionally qualified. And the fact is, Alex, the reason he's doing the legislation he's doing and the reason his cabinet, think about it for a minute. I think the higher-ups in this country, the power brokers, the money people, said, we know Phil Berg and others are right. Do you want to be president? You got to play ball our way. Think about the cabinet he has. That's not the cabinet he ran on. He talks about change. Look about the legislation he's pushing. Is that the candidate of change? I think he's being blackmailed internally. And I'm waiting to see what happens when China and Iran get these documents, because I'm sure they're out there. And we're in a really, really bad situation because of Obama. He is a fraud. One of my lawsuits is I believe he's not only non-natural born, he's not naturalized, but he's an illegal alien. And therefore, one of my lawsuits deals with the fact that he should not have been a U.S. senator, and therefore the salary and benefit and expenses should be returned to the U.S. Treasury of about $1 million. More important, though, because he's a usurper or fraud, all the laws he's passing, as far as I am concerned, are void or voidable. I mean, we're really in a constitutional mess at this point. And, you know, some people are saying, oh, nothing should happen to Obama because if he goes out of office, even legally, Mr. Berg, there'll be riots in the streets. Well, there shouldn't be riots in the streets because there's one person to blame for this, and that's Barack Obama. Remember, he taught constitutional law for 10 years, everyone, aside from the schools he maybe went to. We don't even know. He supposedly went to Occidental and Columbia University and Harvard Law School, where he was head of the Harvard Law Review. People haven't seen his writings. We know nothing about this person. Either we really
and that's the whole point. They release other presidents' records. They're being very secretive.
You know, he signed a document sealing all his records. I mean, this is a total, total disgrace. And we're going to do everything in our power to expose him and force him legally out of office. Nothing that happened to him, but force him legally out. Let him be tried. He should go to jail and he should be deported.
And then he's got all this family that's here illegally, too, and living in slums. He doesn't even help them. I mean, he's really trashy.
Well, that's his aunt up in Boston who's still trying to fight immigration. She's an illegal alien, and he doesn't get near because he's an illegal alien.
An illegal alien president. Well, we know his Barack Obama's a fake name. I mean, we know he was Indonesian citizen. It's on his school records. The records we do have, they're not denying those are real. They just don't want to talk about it. And you're right, they're blackmailing him and totally controlling him. More coming up.
Crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones, only on the GCN Radio Network.
Bill Berg, attorney, is our guest. He is the father of what you call the birther movement that is gaining steam at the state level, nationally. We know Obama's name is fake. We know he lived all over the world. Very, very suspicious. We know he sealed all his school records. I mean, this, no one's ever done this. This is very suspicious. We're going to go back to Phil Berg here in a moment. First, I want to tell you about some of the great sponsors that make this radio show possible. ecolablue.com is an atmospheric water generator. Looks like a water cooler without the water bottle on top. And it's got a little computer screen, hot water, cold water. Their base unit has 7 filters. It runs the water from the air through. Reverse osmosis, carbon, you name it. They've got a whole bunch of other even bigger filter systems that can serve hundreds of people, not just 7.5 gallons a day that serves a home well. Ecolablue.com, ECOLOBLUE.com, or 800-691-6043. That's Ecolablue.com or 800-691-6043. The best water you can get, period. I also want to tell you about New Silver Solution. It's patented. Check out their website, supernaturalsilver.com. One word. Look at all the studies. Read it for yourself. Are you prepared? Do you have what you need to get you and your loved ones through a crisis? There is a great weapon in that fight. And everybody should have it in their arsenal. It's New Silver Solution, supernaturalsilver.com. And again, just do yourself a favor. Go read the studies at their website, supernaturalsilver.com. Watch the videos, read the material, supernaturalsilver.com. Don't forget the online video bookstore as well for all our books and videos and materials at InfoWars.com. Okay, going back to Phil Berg. Phil, I'm going to try to sit down for a while and just let you roll with this whole saga, because we have a lot of new listeners. A lot of people just heard the media demonize birthers. Again, why this is so important, the whole Indonesia situation, and then we're going to open the phones up only on the birther issue, folks, for Phil Berg, 1-800-259-9231, 1-800-259-9231. Phil Berg.
Thank you, Alan. Ladies and gentlemen, this issue is so important because there's nothing more important than our U.S. Constitution. When I was contacted by an individual to do this, I checked into it and I proceeded. One thing I said from the first day I filed the first lawsuit, which is August 21st, 2008, which is like 19 months ago, I said, if I am wrong, Obama, prove me wrong. Show me all the documentation certified from the source and I will withdraw my lawsuits. Nothing like that has forthcoming. Nothing he has produced. Nothing. They keep referring to the same document that they produced as a birth certificate. What they produced, certificate of live birth, has no significance. It doesn't have what a birth certificate has. It does not have the baby's weight. It does not have the baby's length. It does not have the hospital name. It does not have the doctor's name and the doctor's signature. This is what's on a long-form bald birth certificate, which I've now received hundreds of them since we put out the announcement. We're asking people to fax or email or mail them to us for our birth certificate march from Washington, which will be in late May or June. But more significant than the birth certificate issue, because people keep arguing, you know, well, Chris Massey said he saw it, and Glenn or Riley said he saw it. And I think both of them have backed off on those statements. But more significant is the fact that he was adopted or acknowledged in Indonesia. Now, I'll tell you why, because I had an argument the other day with an immigration attorney. I raised the question so people can identify with this. I said, what happens about the children that are being adopted here in the United States from Haiti? And he said, well, they sever all the relationships with Haiti, and they take the new family's last name, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I said, then how can you disagree with me that when Obama's adopted in Indonesia, the same thing doesn't take place? He lost his words. He couldn't speak. The fact is, when Obama, and it's in his book, so he's like stuck on certain things, his parents divorce, his mother remarries, he goes to Indonesia. We have his school record, which says his name is Barry Soturo. And as Alex said a little while ago, when he was first in Occidental, people knew him as Barry. That's his name. That's his legal name. Therefore, unless he has legally changed his name is Barry Soturo. You know, and many of you out there have adopted children or know someone that has adopted a child. They take your family last name. Now, significant is the fact is when he came back at age 10 to live with his mother's parents, his grandparents in Hawaii, we believe that he did not go through immigration. If he did go in through immigration, he would have been given a certificate of citizenship, but because he became a natural of Indonesia, he would have only become naturalized. But we believe he didn't go through there. He went back on his Indonesia passport, and therefore he's an illegal alien. Therefore, he cannot be a U.S. senator. Now, significant with this, on the school record, which is posted on our website from Indonesia, his name is Barry Soturo. His nationality is Indonesia. His religion is Islam. You know, he'd have you believe he was never a Muslim. Well, Islam is Muslim. And after he got sworn into office, now he's like basically catering to the Muslims. You know, during the campaign, you could not use his middle name of Hussein. When he was sworn in, he becomes Barack Hussein Obama.
Then he went to Egypt and said, I have the same religion as you, and spoke Arabic from the Quran better than many people in the country. They were shocked by it. And just incredible.
And then also, Alex, if you recall, he mentioned about the United States. The United States, he said, has the largest Muslim population in the world. I mean, he goes apologizing around the world for the United States actions in the past, and then he bows down to the Saudi king. No president of the United States has ever bowed down to anyone. He bows down, and there's a question if he kissed his ring, also the Saudi king, and then when he's in Japan, he bowed down to the Japanese emperor.
And then they lie and say he's dropping things, but we have the video where he clearly bows to everybody, and it gets worse because we know that his real name is Barry Sataro. We know we have a president who's using an alias. We know that he was adopted, and the media is not even denying that. They just don't even cover it. I mean, this is so huge.
Well, a great point in which you brought up, because, and your listeners can compare it to, look what they did to Sarah Palin during the last 6 weeks of the campaign. The reporters in droves went to Alaska, went under every stone, behind every door, asked her all kinds of questions. Now think back what they did with Obama. They've never asked him anything. If they properly vetted Obama, he would never have been nominated, let alone be elected president. I mean, it's really, and I was interviewed by the New York Times, and I said, I wish I could sue the national media, including the New York Times, for not properly vetting Obama. They even had the guts enough, they printed that. They printed even still in the New York Times, because it's a disgrace. But the problem is, and I laughed about it 2 years ago when Bush questioned Russia about Putin with a free press. We don't have a free press in this country. Most of the press in this country is now owned by three or four major corporations. And there was a study done, except the person who was really the source of the information has not allowed his or her name to be released. But there's supposedly an office in the White House that is keeping pressure on all these media outlets to not discuss this story. But we're bypassing that. The American public is waking up, and that's my goal this year. That's my goal to raise the public awareness, because all of you out there, excuse me, must show your birth certificate. Now, why is this important? Well, there's nothing, in my opinion, and many others, there's nothing more important than the U.S. Constitution. I'm doing this for about 305, or maybe there's 308 million people in this country that deserve to know the truth. I'm doing this for our forefathers who wrote this fantastic document, which countries around the world have tried to copy and duplicate. Most have not. And I'm also doing this, Alex, for the 1.6 million men and women who have died in battle to try to defend this Constitution, and another 1.6 million who have been injured or maimed fighting these wars, and the millions of others who have served our great nation in wars, in wartime and peacetime, defending this Constitution. And then you have Barack Obama, who basically doesn't care about the Constitution. And aside from the things we're talking about, which is the First Amendment, he's talking about things on the Second Amendment and other. I could go on and on about other issues, but we don't.
Well,
have
Phil,
to go
let's
there.
Expand. Let's expand on that.
Sure.
For two weeks, when the ClimateGate emails came out, the media wouldn't cover it. Then for another week or two, they said it wasn't real. Then they were forced to say, okay, it's real. And now they admit it's all been a giant fraud, basically. And so we see this stonewalling by Obama, also saying there's no way our health care can fail. It will pass. It's like this Borg, you will be assimilated, resistance is futile statement. And it's the same thing on the birther issue. It is hurting him. I know there's a cover-up. I know he hasn't released the real birth certificate. I know he's blocking all the school records. I know he's blocking his records when he came back to Hawaii, separate from the birth certificate. Why would they be covering all this up if there wasn't something there? It's a fact. They're covering it up, listeners. It's a fact. They haven't shown the real birth certificate, only the certificate of live birth. It's a fact, a fact, a fact, and it's not going to go away. And if we're 13 months into his presidency, then he's got the lowest approval rating of any president 1 year in history, and plunging even faster. I mean, he's breaking just every record. This is devastating him, whether he likes it or not, and stalling their entire agenda, which I think is a great thing regardless. But now I'm getting to the point where it really does, to me, look like that he's not a citizen.
Oh, absolutely. Up to now, there's even higher, but the latest figures I had are 1.6 million. People say it's 1.7 or 2 million. For your listeners out there, Obama has spent at least 1.6 million fighting my three lawsuits and the 50 other lawsuits that came about. You don't spend that kind of money. You don't spend that kind of money unless you're really hiding something. And he's hiding.
I want to go to calls.
Why is he hiding? He's hiding because he's a phony and a fraud. I really think, and I don't know what your listeners think, I think he's being blackmailed internally. And what happens when Iran gets this? What happens when China gets this? What happens when Cuba gets this? I think he has put our country in a dangerous, dangerous position. Not only what, and on top of that, what he's doing, but, you know, I could go on forever what he's doing, but I'm concerned with Eric Holder. One of my cases, the case where I say he's an illegal alien and shouldn't have been a U.S. senator, we have one of the issues, we just filed our appeal to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. If there ever was a conflict of interest, ladies and gentlemen, let me set it forth real quick. In those type cases, they're called False Claims Act cases. It was sealed because of that, not because it was something special. All False Claims Act cases are sealed. False Claims Act are usually done in Medicaid or Medicare fraud. Hypothetically, if I believe my next-door neighbor is committing fraud, what I would do is I would file this action on behalf of the United States of America, and as the relator, they call the person filing it relator, R-E-L-A-T-O-R, and then also then versus Jane and John Doe from next door. Well, Jane and John Doe are not served. The Justice Department is served. The U.S. Attorney is served, and they have 60 days to review the case. So let's equate that to what I did. I filed this against Obama. So Obama's not served, but the Justice Department.
Well, let me be clear. In layman's terms, the government is not a party to the suit. They don't have standing to be heard. Only you, the citizen, does. And so are you saying that the Justice Department has no right to even block you?
Let me clarify a little more. Actually, what happens is you're bringing this action. The government has three choices what to do. Number one, that they can pursue the case against Jane or John Doe, in this case against Obama. Number two, they can give it to the relator, the person bringing the action, in this case me. Or number three, they can dismiss the case. In very few cases, they ever dismiss the case. Many times, they give it to the relator to proceed because they don't want to spend the time or money on the case. You know, it depends the value, how much of that, et cetera, et cetera.
I understand. Well, they're defending the case is what you're saying. Listen, I know you're very busy, but I want to be able to take a lot of calls, but I want you to also have time to speak. Okay. Can you stay with us about 15 minutes in the next hour?
As long as you want me. I'll stay 2 days. I'll stay a week with you. You're great.
Well, we're going to then let you finish up, and then we're going to take calls for 30 minutes into the next hour because I want to hear the different angles and points that listeners will bring up on this front. But shifting gears again, I want to get this question out there. What do you think of the Arizona House passing it out of committee 6-1, and now it looks like right at half of the legislature is set to vote, and they're gaining votes, that they may pass a law in Arizona saying if Obama runs again in the next 2 years, starts his campaign up, to be on the ballot there in Arizona, that he's going to have to show his real birth certificate?
I think it's fabulous. It just shows that the issue I started, and Alex, I don't care who crosses the finish line with it. I'm glad I'm out there, and I'm going to stay with this issue. I think it's fabulous. A congressman, I don't have his name, from Florida, introduced legislation in the House of Representatives in Washington to the same effect that as of 2012, any presidential candidate has to show that they're constitutionally qualified. Only about 7 to 10 other Republicans joined in that action, no Democrats. Now, why haven't the Democrats joined? Because the Democrats know he's a phony. But this is great, since Washington's not doing it, Arizona is. That's fabulous, and I hope other states do that. And I think they're realizing that the Constitution, I mean, stop and think, everyone out there. We have such great things in this country. And why do we have it? We have it because we fought to defend this. We had a fight with England to form our country. You know, people have died defending this Constitution, and we have this fraud, this phony of Obama coming up there, the biggest hoax in our history. It's wrong, everyone out there.
Well, let me stop you again. Let's say he really was born in Hawaii. Right. Why is he covering it up? But let's go further. He was adopted and became an Indonesian citizen. That's on record.
Right.
And then he tried to lie about that, even though it's in his book. And now I've seen him in a few speeches. We played it a few months ago. Maybe we can pull it up. In fact, try to YouTube. Obama refers to himself as Barry. He's even joked around and called himself Barry Sataro, as if he's trying to inoculate people to this fact because he knows it's coming out.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're really getting to him. I think it just shows. I mean, again, why would you spend, what are you doing? But the significant part. part is he's adopted in Indonesia. Once he's adopted in Indonesia, even if he was born in Hawaii, he would lose his natural born status. And how, just to relate this, I relate that story to you, what the immigration attorney told me about people being adopted from Haiti. They cut off where they came from. Well, then Obama would have come off from here. But I think that's all baloney, because I don't think he was born in Hawaii. When Jerry Corsi went to Kenya to do some...
they had him arrested. They put him on house arrest.
Right. They wouldn't let him do anything except wait.
They wouldn't let him go talk to the village where Obama was born.
Right. Right. And we have on our website, we have the step-grandmother, Sarah Obama, in Swahili, and we have the translation stating she was in the hospital when he was born in Mombasa, Kenya. Now, at the end of the tape, there's some kids yelling, no, Hawaii. She stated definitely she was in the hospital when he was born. That's more significant than anything they've produced. They've produced one thing, that document, which is a phony. Then they keep saying, well, there were two newspaper articles saying he was born. My children live, I'm in Pennsylvania. My children live in other states. When my grandchildren were born, I put announcements in here in my local paper that I have a new grandchild. That doesn't mean he was born there. That doesn't mean my children are born here. They're not. They're born elsewhere. So that, and that's their strongest argument. Well, what do you think? His mother planned ahead. He was going to run for president. That's why she put it in the newspaper. No, I think the mother really wanted him to be a U.S. citizen. But the word is he was in Kenya, and she couldn't fly back because she was too pregnant.
Well, that's exactly what a mother would do. She would come back and try to dummy it up. Even if she had no idea he was going to run for president, she'd want him to be a U.S. citizen.
Correct. Because especially then, and even now, even though right now I think we're in troubled waters because of the many things Obama's doing, people fight to get to the United States because we have freedoms. I mean, the sad part is, ladies and gentlemen, when listening to this, we take for granted some of these freedoms you have in this country, and you shouldn't. I remember with being my children going through a train over in Europe a number of years ago, and we were stopped because we took a train through, at that time, Czechoslovakia, and we didn't have the correct papers for that. The conductor, thank God, hid me and my children. If not, there were armed guards came on that thing and checking with people to take them off. You don't realize what freedoms you have here. I mean, what we're talking about here today, Alex, on your show, you couldn't be doing this in Russia. You couldn't be doing this in
Iran. If they set the precedent to have an illegal alien as president, we're screwed.
Pienso que un sueño parecido no volverá más. Y me pintaba las manos y la cara de azul.
All right, we're going to your calls for Attorney Phil Berg. This is the guy who 2 years ago saw some of this documentation and said, I'm going to investigate. Deputy Attorney General previously in the state, run for governor, member of the NAACP, prominent member, what I believe on their board. They're in that state, and they've said every horrible thing in the world about him. He's racist, all this crud. And even Obama being African is a fraud. African as in not Arab. Of course, there are Arab Africans. He's 6% African. 6%. He's 44% Arab, 50% Anglo-Saxon. I don't care what color he is. The point is that's a distraction. It's just like when you say you don't want socialist health care, which it wasn't even that. It was a insurance company scam. Even Howard Dean said that now, and Dennis Kucinich. That's why it's dead in the water. Even when that came out, Chris Matthews and Carlos Watson and others said, this is racism. It's racism. Racism to say I don't want health care. So they're playing the race card, and it's totally blown up in their face. It's not working. I want to go to your phone calls, and we've got Mr. Berg for another 30 minutes of the next hour, so plenty of time for him to get into any other subjects. But support what he's doing, because he's got a lot of courage. I talked to him off air. They haven't killed him or set him up, because that will just elevate everything he's doing. We'll talk about that before he leaves. But let's talk to Julio in Illinois. Julio, thanks for holding. You're on the air with Attorney Phil Berg. Go ahead.
Alex Jones, how are you this afternoon? Phil Berg, I commend you for what you're doing. God bless you. I will have you in my prayers, sir. You are unbelievable for what you are doing, exposing the fraud known as Barry Satoru, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. My question is, first off, I took an African-American studies class 2 years ago, or last year, here in college in Macomb, Illinois, and we saw the biography channel, biography on Barry Sotoro, and they said, growing up, that they called his nickname was Barry. I do remember that, and I just saw right now on TV for Comcast cable people on demand. You can look that up. They have his biography there. But my question: you're talking about a march in Washington D.C. On tax day, possibly on April 15th. How does Barry Sotoro go off paying his taxes under the alias Barack Obama, similar to TurboTax, the rat Tim Geithner? How does this sick, disgusting man get away, you know, with his aliases, and you have, you know, Benedict Arnold.
You know, hold on. That's a great point. Much of his own cabinet has been caught in tax trouble, doesn't pay their taxes. It's just a lawless group of criminals, and you were going to say something about Mr. Beck.
Yeah, Benedict Arnold, you know, him, you know, Chris Matthews, all these scum, you guys are right. They're setting us up for something because they continue now recently on TV talking about birthers, talking about 9/11 truth movement and how, you know, we're going to assassinate the president. We all need to be peaceful in this InfoWar fight. You know,
Julio, tell him. You've seen that yourself. We played it here. Phil isn't even aware of this. Tell him what you've seen Beck do.
Glenn Beck on his radio program said that, you know, 9/11 truthers, he was talking about Van Jones, are going to infiltrate the White House or are already in the White House and are going to assassinate the president, that we need to have the president in our prayers.
And then another TV show, he said birthers too now.
Yeah, he says, you know, birthers, he had you on his stupid little fourth-grade chalkboard. He had Deborah Medina, Miss Flip-Flopper, who, you know, I'm shocked that happened. But, you know, he had all these people. He had Van Jones on his board. You know, this is,
All right, Julio, thank you. We're going to come back in 70 seconds with the third hour, have Phil Berg respond to what he just heard briefly. Then we're going to quickly, because I want to get a lot of callers in. Julio had great points, but that burned up 5 minutes. We're going to go to Matt, David, John, Nick, and others so we can get to others and bring up different issues and so Phil Berg can respond. His time is very important, so I want to just ask the question and have him respond.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Attorney Phil Berg, founder of the Birther Movement, is our guest. I'm going to have him in the next segment briefly recap. Some stations carry the second half of the show. Why the birther issue is so important. We're taking calls at the bottom of the hour when he leaves us. Then Lindsey Williams with more inside info directly from the highest levels of the global power structure on what they're planning with the dollar and the economy. Phil Berg, you heard Julio's points. Quick comments on that before we go to more calls.
Well, I think it's disgusting that Beck tries to associate me with these other people and tries to tie me in that I hate America. I don't hate America. I do this because I love America, and I'm going to challenge Beck. He won't do it. I'm going to challenge him to a debate. He's got the nerve to put me up there and talk about me. I'm going to challenge him to a debate. He probably won't do it, but it's wrong what he's doing and wrong making me connotations. I want peace. I want a peaceful revolution. I want this through the court system and not through that. I'm going to embrace the American public to have a birth certificate march in Washington, which will be peaceful, and demand that if he can't prove that he's constitutionally eligible, that he resign. Can you see a million people there with a copy of birth certificate and Obama like not doing? The media would have to cover this.
And by the way, at these town halls, as you know, for a year now, Republican and Democrats will say, no, he's American citizen, and literally the whole room starts screaming at him, even at Democrat events. People are sick of this, and ObamaCrimes.com is your website. I've seen it on TV. I've heard it where he puts you up there next to the weathermen and others and says, these people hate America. They're dangerous. Folks, send those videos because there's millions of listeners. You can find them. I have a small staff. I've seen it. I don't have time to go dig it out. It would take maybe 10 hours, you know, dig through hundreds of shows. Send it all to Phil Berg. Help him so he has the info, but also support ObamaCrimes.com. Let's go to Matt in Ohio. Matt, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Matt.
I may be way out in left field here, but what do you think the chances are that the puppet masters, the people that pull Obama's strings and the higher ups in government, are going to let Obama's true identity and his birth certificate and all that out at the right time to get him impeached in order to impose more laws on us to be able to keep better track of us.
You're saying that could be the false flag. It would cause riots, all sorts of problems. Phil, your take on it.
Well, you know, I'm going to demand when we get him out of office, and we're going to do it, we're going to demand we'll hold a news conference. I'm going to call all the top politicians in this country and the religious leaders and say, do you plan to cause riots in the streets and damage property and injure and kill people? Why? The only person responsible for this is Barack Obama. No, I don't think they're going to let it out. I think what's going to happen is the American public is going to demand it. I think about 20 million people know about this. Help me raise the public awareness to 100 million people. We will force him out of office because this is outrageous what he is doing, and he's out to destruct, to tear apart our country.
Well, it's just like ClimateGate in the first month when they said it wasn't real, and now it blew up in their face, and they've all admitted they're liars.
Right.
It's the same thing. They're stonewalling. The truth can't be stopped. We know he's an Indonesian citizen. We know his real name's Barry Sitaro. That's enough right there under law, because he can't be a natural. Explain that to people, Phil.
Well, once he's adopted there, he becomes a natural of Indonesia, and therefore, when he came back, according to our immigration laws, he would only become naturalized. But someone did what's called a FOIA request, Freedom of Information request, sent me a copy. They asked for a copy of Obama's birth certificate. It came back that he never had one. Now, they didn't check for Barry Sitaro, but I think he never had one. I think he traveled on his Indonesia passport. That's why at age 20, he stopped in Indonesia on his way to Pakistan to renew his passport.
Let's be clear on this. His real name's Barry Sitaro on record. Coming up, we've got him calling into a radio show in D.C., calling himself Barry. That's coming up. His name is Barry Sitaro. Folks, do you realize they're freezing all his documents, all his records? They're covering something up that's even worse than him really being an Indonesian citizen. We have an Indonesian citizen as our president, and even if he had been a U.S. citizen before, he'd have to waive that citizenship to become a citizen of Indonesia. I mean, if I wanted to go waive my citizenship.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We have the father of the birther movement, attorney Phil Berg, ObamaCrimes.com, with us, former deputy attorney general in his state, member of the NAACP, Democrat, who during the primaries began to investigate Obama. He's just on record. His real name is Barry Sitaro, a citizen of Indonesia. That's the only record we can get. He admits that, but says it's no big deal. And the media never covers that. They just say, we've shown the birth certificate. These people are lying. Why has Obama sealed all of his school records? Because the real name is Barry Sitaro. And a lot of people are coming forward saying he was called Barry Sitaro then and that he was getting foreign aid. Now, we're going to go back to your calls, David, John, Nick, Ronald, and others. Questions for Phil Berg only on the subject of the birther issue and where his court cases are going. But here's the associated. Phil, go ahead. I was going to.
Yeah, no, that's right. I just want to say something, because many people say, well, a parent can't renounce, you know, give up their children's rights. Well, that's true to a point. But if Obama wanted to do that between the ages of 18 and 21, he would have had to renounce his Indonesia citizenship and reaffirm any citizenship that he did have for the United States. There's no evidence he did that either.
He sealed all those records, the college, everything. Let's play this clip. Just like everybody else, Barry from D.C. called Virginia Governor Tim Kaine's radio show to complain about traffic. But Barry from D.C. was really President Barack Obama, who surprised Kaine with a prank call just like everybody else. Barry from D.C. Now, here is Obama. This is Associated Press about a couple months ago. This was December 22nd, 2009, last year, calling in using his real name. Here it is.
Governor, let's get back to the phones and let some callers. We have Barry from D.C. is calling. Go ahead, Barry.
Well, Governor Kaine, this is actually the President of the United States calling.
I have
questions about traffic in Northern Virginia.
Oh.
But rather than go there, I just wanted to say how proud we are of your service as governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and just wish you and the family all the best.
Okay.
Christmas season.
And it goes on. That's AP News right there, AP video. So it's a big joke to him to use his real name, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah, it really is. But when he doesn't acknowledge it, it just reinforces the words I've been using, that he's a fraud and he's a phony. You notice the Secret Service isn't coming after me because I'm talking the truth. He's a fraud, he's a phony. It's the biggest hoax in the history of our country, ladies and gentlemen. We must stop it.
Well, it gets worse. I could play video from Vermont and from Missouri where they had police go on the news and say, if you criticize Obama and say he's not a Christian or say he wasn't born here, we're going to arrest you. Did you ever see that video?
No, I heard about it, so send it to me. I'd like to see that one.
In fact, ask Aaron the headline. I think it's something like Thought Police in Missouri. But the point is, no, that was on TV. I mean, they were on TV saying, we will arrest you. So that shows the mindset. And it turned out the Obama campaign was having local Democrat police and sheriffs and prosecutors come out and threaten people. I mean, this is, look, Jerome Corsi got the documents, the emails from Obama when he was in the Senate to his cousin, Odinga, threatening and saying, cause riots. So you lost the election. Cause riots, and they'll give you a position in the government, and they did.
Not only causing riots, what they did is they caused riots. They set fire to churches with people alive. They burned down churches. They burned people alive. I mean, that's a bad point. And then Odinga became...
And Obama told them to do it.
Right. And then Obama raised $1 million for him during that time. And then by doing all that, they forced that Odinga was given a position in the government over there.
Yeah, before they just had president, they made a prime ministership for him.
Yep.
I mean, because they were burning everything down, and Obama told him in the email, burn it. I mean, this guy's a terrorist. There's no doubt about it. Let's take another call here. David Main, you're on the air, David.
Yes, gentlemen, I have a comment and a question. Good job, Phil.
Thank you, David.
I will refer to our president from here on as President Saturo, and I recommend anybody else do the same. And when people ask you, what are you, what is that all about, then explain to them everything that you've laid out. Now, my question is a constitutional crisis question. If it's found out, if we can prove that he's illegitimate, and I believe he is, then every executive order, every bill he signed, every treaty, every foreign agreement is invalid. What happens then if it's, say, 3 years into the presidency and this all comes out and he has to leave? No doubt about it, it's pointless to argue.
Well, everything he's done is bad, so that sounds great.
Yeah, David, that's why I don't want to wait 3 years. I want to get it this year. That's why I want the people to join with me when we have announced the march. Because he is a phony. Everything he has done is void or avoidable. It's really a disgrace. And we are in a constitutional crisis because it would take another whole show. I can't go into the whole thing about who would become president. You used to vote, I don't know the amendment, you used to vote separate for president and vice president. You vote now jointly for them. So therefore, I don't believe Biden would become because it was a fraudulent ticket. Does it go back to January 8th, the joint session of Congress, when Congress violated their duty because they were only going to vote for their duty was to vote for, count the votes, electoral college votes for a qualified person. So does it go back there? Because if one member of the House, one member of the Senate had given a written objection, they would have gone to the separate House and Senate to discuss the issue. And if they didn't agree, they would have nominated whoever they wanted for president, vice president. But because they didn't do their job, does it go back to December 15th when all the electors met in the state capitals in the various states, and they voted, but improperly, because they were only supposed to vote for a constitutionally qualified candidate, or does it go back to November 8th, Election Day? We have a real mess on our hands, but I believe that mess has to be dealt with more so than keeping Obama a fraud.
I hear you. We got to move quick. David, I appreciate your call. Speaking about threats, it came out in major newspapers last year that there's 25 people on Obama's hit list, and of course, I'm number 24 on there, and it said that birther groups and yourself are also on the list, and there is no doubt that they've got an enemies list. People need to be praying for all of us.
All right, okay. Yes, please pray for me, everyone out there.
Absolutely, and also spread the word. So you don't know when the march is going to be yet?
We're working on that. As soon as I have the date, I'll call you back, and then we'll have it up on our website, and we'll tell you if we get on your show and spread the word. But But the initial reaction response from people is phenomenal. People want to do something because it's something they can do, and every one of your listeners can identify with the birth certificate issue. One other thing, the people that Obama associated with, Ayers and the Reverend Wright and all those people, et cetera, et cetera. You know, he couldn't even get a job as a Chicago police officer with who he dealt with. He couldn't get a job as an FBI agent or a Secret Service agent because of this, but yet the Secret Service is protecting him. I mean, well, think about it. Doesn't even make sense.
I'm not saying this is a good thing, but I understand why it's been done. In the old days, if you weren't 3, 4, or 5th generation, you couldn't be FBI or Secret Service because it was important that you not be a spy. Because when the Constitution was ratified, for those that don't know, they had cases of Austria sending its people, members of its government, its ruling class and royalty, in to Poland and other countries to try to get elected and take over those nations. And so this has always been an old problem. And if this guy, I mean, his real name's Barry Sataro. How is he our president? As you say, the Indonesia thing is bona fide 100%. That right there disqualifies him. Forget the birth certificate.
Right. Yep, absolutely. And we're running an ad on that this next week in the paper, Washington Times, and we're going to be doing other ads across the country. If we, the more money we raise, we'll spread the word. We must spread the word around the country, and we want a march on Washington like we never saw.
All right, let's talk to John in Maine. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Please tell how his collegiate records are being sealed or were sealed, his adult records. How does that operate? So I can show Mom.
Well, the reason that I was the first one that came out, I believe his college records are sealed for one reason. It's going to show he applied for and received foreign aid either.
No. He's asking how were they sealed?
How were they sealed? An executive order he signed the day of that he was sworn into office.
You know, so the first thing on his mind when he got sworn in and had that executive power was to keep his records secret.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because he doesn't want us to We know nothing about him. We haven't seen one thing from him.
John, does that answer your question?
Yes. Do you know the number of that executive order?
No, I don't.
So I can show my mom.
Hey, guys, search engine, Obama signs executive order sealing records. I remember that in the news on January 22nd. Obama signs executive order sealing records. Thanks for the call, John. Let's talk to Nick in Colorado. Nick, you're on the air. Go.
Hey, I just was wondering since we know that the shadow government basically put Obama into his position, my question is, why do you think that they didn't put somebody in there that could produce the documents or just, you know, produce documents for him since they get...
I'll answer the question. They knew he was slick and a darling. They could blackmail him and control him with the information, with it being compromised. And they love to violate our Constitution and sovereignty. Like Obama became the first, I'm going to play this later. Did you guys cue it up? In fall of the Republic, we have him becoming the first U.S. president to chair the U.N. Security Council that violates the Constitution. Phil Berg.
Yes, it does violate the Constitution. And I think they put him up because when I got the phone call, you got to think about this, ladies and gentlemen. The phone call I got was, they said, Phil, you're the only attorney in the country we know with brass, you know what, that would sue Obama. And that was an honor I took here. But since then, other attorneys have joined suit. But it's very rare you're going to find someone that wants to challenge the president or someone of that stature. And I did it because I think there's nothing more important than our Constitution. And there's very few of us that will do something like that.
Absolutely. And again, I meant to have it queued up from Fall of the Republic. We did like 5 minutes in the film. And I'll play it before the show ends today after you leave us, specifically on him. And CNN said he's now president of the world. He has to swear the UN oath. And we give the subsection of the Constitution where it says you can't do that. I mean, this is outrageous.
Right. And anything he does, the national media is not anything detrimental. The national media does not cover it.
All right, we're going to jam in Nick, Ronald, Bob, and John's quick questions, quick answers from Phil Berg, ObamaCrimes.com. I'm Alex Jones. Our websites are InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. Find out all about Obama in my film, Fall of the Republic, on DVD. Williams is coming up, but when we start the next segment, I'm going to play about 4 minutes from Fall of the Republic, where I break down Obama becoming the head of the UN. And I'll give you the chapter and verse, the Constitution, where it's treason. Ronald in New Jersey, you're on the air with Phil Berg. Go ahead.
Yes, sir, Mr. Berg, Alex, thank you very much. Just to be quick, I have a question that I've been trying to get a good answer to for about a year. I agree with everything you said. I think that there's ample evidence that there is no birth certificate. But even if there was, even if Obama was born in Hawaii, just by virtue of the fact that his father was never an American, and had he lived, could very well be ruling Kenya, doesn't that in itself contradict what was intended by the founders and coining the term natural born citizen?
I don't believe so, and that's an argument other attorneys have come forth with. I don't believe so because we keep changing the definition of natural born for this reason. If husband and wife, boyfriend and girlfriend are traveling any place in the world and a child is born, if both are U.S. citizens, their child, when it comes back through immigration and gets a passport, is considered natural born. The statute here, which was changed when Obama was supposedly born August 4, 1961, the American citizen, in this case the mother, to convey natural born status, had to live in this country for 10 years, and 5 of those years had to be after the age of 14. 14 is 5 is 19. She was only 18, so she couldn't convey natural born. So
we've got them right there. I mean,
we have them all over the place. The guy's a fraud. The guy's a phony.
His real name's Barry Sitaro. Bob in Texas. Bob, yeah. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have two quick comments. A comment for Mr. Berg was that back before the election, I was able to get through and talk to John Moody, the vice president of Fox News, and his excuse for them not covering it is that it is quote unquote not their job, and that people shouldn't be lazy and do the work themselves, which I found pretty funny.
Your phone's really bad. You have a question?
No, just a comment.
Well, all right, Bob, thank you.
That's an interesting comment because Fox is not their job. Fox, it's very strange. They came out of New York, spent an hour and a half driving down here, filmed me for an hour and a half, went back to New York, never aired 1 minute of it. But then if it's not their job, then how come all the media, including Fox, ripped apart, and maybe Fox didn't do it, but all the other media ripped apart Sarah Palin? You know, their job.
Well, now Fox is going after you, great guns. With the birther thing, I mean, it's incredible, folks. I mean, that is wrong. If Phil Berg, even if he was wrong, has a right to ask these questions. This is outrageous that Glenn Beck's doing that. And I don't want to attack Glenn Beck, but I'm sick of him. Okay, let's talk to John in Wisconsin. John, you're on the air with Phil Berg. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Berg. Are you still looking for someone with a common ancestor, since that would convey a material interest in the birth certificate?
Sure. Are you?
Yeah, I have a common ancestor. Disadvantage of being a Mayflower family. There are only so many white people on the continent.
Well, contact me afterwards, and we'll see what we can do. They'll come up with some excuse. But
yeah, that's too far back. I mean, if he's related to the Mayflower, then I'm related to Obama on both sides of my family.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's probably too far back. But contact me. We'll see what we can do. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thanks for the call. Let's talk to George in Connecticut. You're on the air with Phil Berg. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex. Boy, you're a hard man to get through to four times. But anyway, the main point is both you guys should try to sue through the English court for them trying to slander you, whatever, especially for you with the Financial Times, because you don't even have to prove that they slandered you. They have to prove that they innocently or they were innocent of not slandering you. And then being these Murdoch papers and magazines and institutions, guaranteed they're rebroadcast there. You can sue their pants off and own them and then use their own money to kick their ass all over the world.
All right, George, it's a good point. You have been slandered by the Murdoch papers in England. I've seen it, and I have as well. What about that?
Interesting point. The only thing I'm swamped right with the Obama thing, but we'll have to consider that. For you and me, Alex, maybe we could do something, get some money out of these people. But I'm more concerned right now with using my efforts to out Obama or Barry Sotoro, and we'll worry about.
Yeah, that's the big fish. On. That's the big fish we've got to fry. Jamming in one more call, Chris in Maryland. You're on the air.
See you guys. Hey, fellas. It's my understanding. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I had a discussion with my dad. But the real issue isn't your Hannitys and your Glenn Becks. Isn't the real problem the progressives that are taking over our nation?
Absolutely. But the problem is Beck supported the banker bailout. Beck says global warming's real now. We've discredited the fake liberals. I'm attacking anybody who's unconstitutional. But, I mean, what's your point there?
point is that the progressives, and I believe maybe 100% of the Democrats and the majority of the Republicans together are all progressive in destroying the Constitution. They're after the Constitution.
All right, listen, I got to let you go because that's not really a question on this issue. Phil Berg, we got Lindsey Williams coming up, and I'm going to get him to hold a few minutes. I'm sure he's fine because we've got an hour and a half with him coming up. I want to come back and take some calls. One guy disagrees, Ted in North Carolina. Just heard an ad for Gusset Jeans. We've got links to it up on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. These are awesome jeans. I've got several pairs. I'm going to start wearing these exclusively. They fit just like Levi's, last longer, and they're made in America. So check out their website up at Infowars.com or just Google Gusset Jeans. Okay. I saw this late last week. And it really upset me because, sure, they look like real guns. You can buy an M16. You can buy something that looks like an AK-47. You can buy stuff that looks like a Beretta handgun. They shoot little plastic pellets. So they're not even BB guns. It's a little bit bigger pellet than a BB, about, I guess, three times the size. I've bought quite a few of these guns to train my 5-year-old daughter and 7-year-old son on marksmanship in the backyard. And the ATF in Cornelius, Oregon, went in to one of the local dealers of airsoft plastic pellet guns that they have no statutory authority, nothing. Went in, took the guns from Customs. It turns out Customs called them the toy guns and are now claiming that they can just basically, outside of law, rule what is a firearm. And we see cases where somebody's got an AR-15 that they bought legal. It has a malfunction, fires 2 or 3 rounds. The shooting range calls the police on them. And in federal court, they say it doesn't matter. Even if you knew, didn't know and it was a legal gun, you're going to prison. So the ATF is harassing lawful gun owners. Now they're raiding people every day. I see in the news, neighbors will see somebody with a rifle putting in their car at their house. The police come, they find 5 guns, 1,000 rounds of ammo. There's no law against an arsenal. They call it an arsenal. They take your guns, arrest you without a law. And so we're joined by Brad Martin of Airsoft, and we'll give you his website here specifically from Oregon. But he and his son run this toy store, and these are sold in Walmart. These are sold in Academy. These are sold most hardware stores, hunting supply stores. I mean, this is ridiculous. And for them to say you can cartridge and could build a real gun out of this because it looks like a gun, I mean, it's asinine. I mean, yeah, if you spent 2 or 3 times the money it takes to make a, to buy a real gun, maybe you could, and it'd blow up in your face. So he joins us to talk about all the different facets and angles of this and how this is just being selectively enforced. And even the selective enforcement is just made up. And if this is allowed to stand, it sets an incredibly dangerous precedent. Because if they can ban BB guns that shoot plastic BBs, what's going to happen to the deadly Red Ryder? Will it be banned as an assault weapon? So we now speak to our guest, Brad Martin. Brad, break down exactly what happened and all the latest developments for us.
Well, hi there, Mr. Jones. Yeah, this started back in October of 2009. We import airsoft toy guns and airsoft equipment to go along with those. And over the last 5 or 6 years, we've had several interventions from Customs where they've taken in the vicinity of about $17,000 worth of product from us. And, you know, I haven't really made a big issue out of it. We just took our licks and kept on keeping on, sort of. But bottom line is, this most recent seizure in October was of 30 gas-powered M4 lookalikes. And these pieces are 100% legitimate. They're designed to fire these quarter-inch plastic BBs, as you described, and that's their function. Well, when Customs received these, one or two of their agents looked at them and decided that it was above their pay grade to make a call on these things. So they called in the ATF to look at them. So ATF took one or more of these things back to their laboratory in Maryland or wherever this thing is, held them for 5 months, and then in early February, after I had mailed some protest letters to the ATF and Customs, I finally get a response back saying that I was not going to get these toy guns back. And they quoted a code, it was code number 922, and it seems that the thing that they're seizing upon is that these toy guns are easily convertible to real steel firearms. So in other words, they're saying anybody with a little bit of effort can take these guns, these toys, and turn them into real guns. And from our perspective, this is just totally absurd.
Because they look like real guns.
Yeah, yeah. The other day, the port director from Customs in Seattle called all the local TV affiliates in and gave this news conference on air, holding one of our guns and saying that this is a threat to the safety of America, and these are, he labeled them as machine guns. And while he was talking and handling this gun of ours, this toy of ours, he was trying to stick the magazine into the magwell, and he had the magazine turned around backwards. He didn't even know which way the bloody magazine.
We're going to play a clip of this coming up. You've got the ATF agent putting on this big hullabaloo, trying to scare everybody to set the precedent to ban something that isn't even a BB gun because it looks scary to them. My God, if this is allowed to stand, this is an incredible new precedent.
Well, it is. It is scary. You know, and this is a David and Goliath scenario where, you know, I could bankrupt myself fighting the federal government and still end up a loser here. But, you know, it's time for us to stir up the pot a little bit and kind of try to put the brakes on this behavior.
We're going to play this video that's up on your website for the PrisonPlanet.tv viewers and radio listeners. Give us your web address for folks that want to follow this case.
Okay, sure. The web address is airsoftoutletnw.com.
So airsoftoutletnorthwest.com, just NW.
Yeah, just NW, not the Northwest, just NW.
All right, we're going to play one of the myriad of newscasts trying to create a panic over the devilish plastic BB gun that is so scary looking. Here it is.
And welcome, everyone, and good evening. I'm Jeff Giannola.
And I'm Kelly Day. Federal agents seize a ship of toy guns they say in the wrong hands. They could have actually been deadly.
In this Coin Local 6 exclusive, our reporter Alexis Del Cid talked to the local businessman who ordered these toy guns. And I see you have one there, huh, Alexis?
Jeff, this is an example of one of the toy guns seized. And besides the orange tip, it looks pretty real. But this is an airsoft toy. It shoots plastic BBs. And the man who ordered these says anyone with any knowledge of weapons should be able to figure that out. No bullets, just plastic BBs. Not a battlefield, just a wooded area made to look like one.
It's another version of paintball.
For the past 7 years, Brad Martin and his son Ben say their family business in Cornelius has steadily grown as simulated combat gaming grows in popularity across the country.
This is the contemporary version of Civil War reenacting.
While they aim for authenticity in every piece of gear, the Martins didn't anticipate a seizure by customs and ATF agents in Tacoma as their latest shipment of toy guns arrived from Taiwan.
Any kid, any parent, any adult going out of the house with this needs to be ready for trouble.
ATF Special Agent Kelvin Crenshaw says not only is the shipment missing the orange tips required on all imported toy guns,
with minimal work, it could be converted to a machine gun.
To say these are readily convertible to machine guns is absolutely preposterous. The round wouldn't go into the barrel for one, and two, if the firing pin did strike the primer, the gun would basically blow up in your face.
Also, the Martins say there are tens of thousands of replicas just like these sold in America already. The only reason they buy from Taiwan is because it's cheaper. until now.
He's spent all this manpower, tax dollars, and time, and wasted my time, my money, my profitability to seize 30 toy guns. That's what he's done. And he's portrayed himself as a great hero.
But ATF insists that it did the testing and determined that, yes, these can be converted into military-grade weapons. The Martins requested to see the documentation of that, and they were told that they'd have to file a Freedom of Information request with ATF. Now, as for the orange tips, this one has one. The ones that came in from Taiwan didn't. But the Martins say that's happened before with their shipments from Taiwan, and they just had to go up to Tacoma and paint the tips orange themselves. So they wonder why this is being made into an issue now. Alexis Del Cid, Coin Local 6.
Okay, and we have Brad Martin online with us. So you've got an ATF officer in a fancy suit who can't even put the cartridge in it. He can't put the magazine in. It shoots little bitty round plastic BBs that are look like they're even smaller than 22 caliber. There's no room for a cartridge to go in. There's no room for propellant. He uses air to shoot plastic BBs. And what's really happening, I saw this 5 years ago or so in England, where they're trying to ban these over there, they don't like the gun culture growing because this is a gateway to real firearms. People are finding out how much fun it is to target shoot or to dress up in gear and go to the equivalent of paintball ranges. I, run around with my children, in the backyard and shoot targets and shoot tin cans. And you learn how to be a good marksman. Then they graduate to BB guns. Then they graduate to real firearms. And this is incredible. This is lawlessness. And you told me off air that you've talked to other ATF branches and they're like, we can't believe this happened. These aren't real firearms. We don't have a statutory authority, but it doesn't matter. They're in your area. They're just going to do whatever they want. And I guess if they don't have a law, they don't care. Cause he says, you go outside with this, you're looking for trouble. He feels like you shouldn't have this as a slave, and so he's going to take them. That's the end of it. Doesn't matter if it's $30,000 shipment. Doesn't matter, because they run this country now.
Yep, that's exactly right. After about 3 months of this seizure going on, I started writing letters and calling people. I talked to an agent back in Maryland, I believe it was, who was in the ATF Division of Firearms Importations, and I explained the situation to her, and she said, well, why did ATF take airsoft? And I said, well, I guess because they can. And she said, well, ATF has no jurisdiction over airsoft, and if you would give my telephone number, meaning her telephone number, to the local ATF people and tell them to call her, she would inform them that they have no jurisdiction over airsoft.
Now, again,
that didn't dissuade them.
That didn't dissuade them. So explain who you separately talked to at ATF, who was what her position is, and then what they said, because we want to write an article about this.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I can provide you with a phone number at some future. I don't have it with me right here. But as I mentioned, after calling the ATF back east and explaining my situation to about four or five people, I finally got to this agent in, as I mentioned, the Division of Firearms Importation. And I explained it to her, and she said, we have no jurisdiction over airsoft.
The
ATF controls by ruling. That's what they do. They see something. They don't need a law about it. They just make a ruling.
Let me expand on that.
Yeah.
This is a commerce issue. You've been robbed. When an officer, federal or state, operates clearly outside their jurisdiction, consciously through color of law, you have been physically robbed, and so you file a criminal police report that you've been robbed.
Well, in essence, I wrote to them, and I said, what's happening with this shipment? Why am I getting no information about this? Because they're incredibly secretive. They don't give you any information.
No judge, no jury, no indictment, no interview, no arrest, no paperwork. Just your 30,000 of toy guns is gone, pal. We don't need no stinking warrants or paperwork. We rule America. You don't sell toy guns around here, boy.
Absolutely, that's right. And I figured that if they really thought my guns were machine guns like they said they were, I'd be in handcuffs by now. But they're not down here arresting me. And they're not in other vendors' stores.
This is sold at Walmart, Academy, everywhere, the exact same fake M16 plastic toy guns. People are running around with these, having a great time, and it's buoying the gun culture. And I think this is an ATF case on purpose from the Obama administration. We confirmed in Austin they shut down a gun show with no law to set a national precedent. And I believe they picked you as a small independent dealer to set the precedent.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Yes, sir, I agree with you.
Well, give out your website again for Legal Eagles, lawyers on the West Coast, other people that want to bring civil rights suits, commerce suits, robbery suits, criminal charges, because we have a lot of experts out there that are listening that would want to email you advice.
Yeah, nothing would please me more. My website is www.airsoftoutletnw.com.
Now, tell people, Brad Martin, when this first happened and any new developments, because, we're quite a few days into this, and I guess they say, look, talk to the hand. You don't get paperwork. You don't get anything. We just rob you.
Well, that's basically it. Now, I spoke to an ATF agent up in Tacoma a week or 10 days ago, and this guy had his head screwed on straight. I think there are some really good agents in the company, basically, but the anti-gun influence is so strong that I think these sensible guys get shouted down. But I was talking to him, and he said that basically Customs has me on a hit list now, that anytime one of my orders hits port, they're going to flag my order. They're going to take it for intensive examination. And right now, they have two more of my orders backed up in port for intensive examination. And
they're going to put you out of business. They got a $30,000 order and just grabbed it with the ATF. What have they gotten now?
Oh, they've got about another $20,000 in there now. Yeah, about another $20,000.
Unbelievable. Well, people need to all over the country order the guns you've got in stock, the plastic toy pellet guns, just to keep you afloat, because that's one thing I noticed the feds will do. They'll just ruin you to set the precedent, pick a little guy, and then hope you just go away.
Yeah, well, we're not going to go away. You piss off a Scotsman and they're going to fight back. So I'm kind of fed up with their behavior.
I hear you, my friend.
I don't know if I can generate enough income to take the feds to court or not, but I'm going to look at that. And I don't know if the NRA or other gun groups could take up interest in this and have talked.
We've got Larry Pratt on. What is Pratt on Thursday? Head of Gun Owners of America. We're going to get, believe me, Jews for Preservation of Firearms or the Gun Owners of America is going to want to help you. We've got the ATF red-handed here in lawlessness, color of law, Shanghaiing, freebooting. This is the same as just robbing a stagecoach. I mean, they are bandits here, and if the precedent gets set by Customs and these guys, we're all in deep trouble. We gotta hang together, or we'll surely hang separate. One more segment, sir. Stay right there.
Yeah.
AirsoftOutletNW.com. Our website's InfoWars.com. Congressman Ron Paul, political activist, freedom defender, folks like this gentleman, gun shows. We're here defending, lobbying for liberty and freedom, rallying people to support the Constitution and Bill of Rights. That's why it's important to support InfoWars.com, visit the online video bookstore, whether you get a ball cap, or whether you buy a video. You can get Jesse Ventura's new book that we're now going to start shipping, $5 off, $19.95, and get one of my films free, a $45 value for $19.95, available at InfoWars.com. We're carrying a new video, which is an amazing documentary by the folks that brought you America's Secret Beginnings, A Lamp in the Dark, The Untold History of the Bible, a lot of key stuff, hidden history. This just went on the shopping cart today. InfoWars.com or call toll-free 888-253-3139. Going back to this gentleman, Brad Martin, I mean, this is like more than Orwellian. It's surreal, like a comedy. The news holding up a gun with a red tip, a little toy plastic machine gun, saying, oh, my gosh, it's so scary. And an ATF guy will put his picture up there, you know, looking like he's in deep fear over all this. I mean, if they can get toy guns, nothing's safe.
It's sure the truth. You know, I went over to the local coffee shop for a cup this morning, and the police chief from our town was in there, and off the record, not as police chief, but he's 100% behind us on this. And he and I were talking, and he was saying that Americans are afraid of everything, and the government wants to protect us from everything that's even a little bit scary. And basically that's what's happening here. You know, this creeping totalitarianism of the government wanting to have their fingers and control everything. And it's just got to stop somewhere. I don't know where it stops, but we got to do something about it.
Well, look at this ATF officer. What is his name? Clevin? Throw him back up on screen. Clevin Crenshaw. I mean, he's in what looks like a $2,000 suit, taxpayer paid for.
That's a beautiful suit he's wearing. I got to say that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a stunt for him, a stunt from the ATF. Guaranteed Obama's pushing this. And he's here trampling on your right to commerce. They've now got $50,000 of your toy guns, and they just think you're not even human. I mean, doing this to you, it's like you don't even exist.
That's so true. You know, it's like, since when is it a crime against a vendor who brings in a legal product, and somebody somewhere, some wacko decides that he's going to convert that legal product into something illegal? Why does that make it the vendor's crime that he's brought in a legal product?
And but by the way, I own some of these. I mean, it converts something that's air-powered and doesn't even have the mechanism to, you know, put in a cartridge that has powder that projects it. I mean, this is asinine. I mean, sure, if you went to a top machinist, maybe they could build something that would chamber around, but then this is tin metal. It would blow up.
Well, that's our point too, and if a guy wanted an AR-15 or an M4, he could go to his local gun store and pay $1,000 and get a dependable platform instead of going to an airsoft store and paying probably around $500 for this product, spending all kinds of time and energy trying to convert this into a gun that's going to blow up into his face. It's totally illogical. This is.
Do you
totally
agree with
illogical.
Me, though, that they've been trying to kill the gun culture and that airsoft is literally one of the, and I noticed this years ago, one of the key things getting people into the gun culture?
I think you're right. I think they're scared of an armed electorate is what they're scared of.
I tell you what, I know you've got to go, but we're going to break for 1 minute. Let's do five more so we can talk about this creeping totalitarianism with you. Then it's open phones and news blitz for the rest of the final hour.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are live, ladies and gentlemen, 1 hour into this Wednesday, 17th day of February 2010. Worldwide broadcast on the AM, FM, Global Shortwave Satellite, number one show on the Internet, according to Alexis. Shoutcast and other gauges. Thank you for joining us for the next hour. Lord Christopher Monckton, the third Viscount of Monckton and Brenchley, a journalist, a researcher, a scientist, a consultant, one of the top advisors to Margaret Thatcher. We're very honored to have him. He just got back from a whirlwind tour of Australia with devastating effect on the fraud there. Rudd collapsing as the global warming fraud continues to fall in on itself. Huge developments. We're going to cover more than 30 climate gate level scandals that have come out, each overshadowing the next or the last. We're also going to cover their counterstrike plans, as Schwarzenegger and others said at Copenhagen when it was clear it was dead. They're going to take over the cities and states. Austin faces $2.6 billion in the next 3 years in taxes on energy alone, according to Austin Energy and the mayor. They're set later this month or early next month to vote it through. The UN is involved here locally. So we're going to look at it all today. Also, criminal prosecutions of these frauds. Phil Jones, one of the head masters at collating the fraudulent data, admitting now that Lord Monckton is right. Since 1995, no warming. So we're going to go to break here in a moment. But for the next hour, Lord Christopher Monckton to chronicle and break down, as no one else can, the leading expert, in my educated opinion, on the full scope of this attempted revolution to bring society under neo-feudalistic serfdom. Sir, thank you for joining us.
Well, Alex, what a wonderful introduction. I just can't wait to hear what I'm going to say.
we've got about 2.5 minutes before we go to break. Just give us a brief overview of what you're going to be covering.
Well, I think the first thing we've got to do is to say that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that's the UN climate panel, which has produced four major reports on the climate saying we're all doomed, is now effectively dead. There have been so many revelations over recent weeks of its failure to do the science properly, of it deliberately including false and alarming data with the intention and the declared intention of influencing governments. It's all over for the IPCC. Nobody is going to take it seriously ever again. I think that's the main point. But then you're quite right. As you said in your introduction, the problem we've now got is that even though national governments are now beginning to realize they can't go on getting away with this because it isn't a vote winner, local administrations, still bullied by these hugely well-funded environmental lobby groups like Greenpeace, which, as far as I know, has a fleet of ships larger than the British Navy. Goodness knows where it gets the money from to run them, but I saw one of their huge ships parked up in Copenhagen with propaganda slogans painted all over it. These organizations are very active at local and state level, and what we're going to need to do eventually is, at government level, simply ban any spending on global warming-related matters, because this scare is now officially dead.
I want you again today to address the criminal activities, criminal investigations, your continued challenge for Al Gore to debate you. I have it out of the Dallas Morning News today. The state of Texas is moving to block Austin and other cities that have literally been paid off by these organizations to seize the infrastructure and levy taxes. I mean, the $2.6 billion, and that's Austin Energy, is bigger per year over the 3 years than the entire current taxing system. I mean, talk about a power grab.
That's right. It is outrageous what's going on, and the only way to do that is to stop it from the top down. So that eventually everybody realizes that this money-making game, at the expense chiefly of the working taxpayer, it's your blue-collar guy, the guy on whose back, on whose sweat of his brow, the rest of us live so comfortably. It's he who is going to get marmalized and clobbered.
Stay there, Lord Monckton. Got a break.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are live. Lord Christopher Monckton is our guest. We'll put his website that is invaluable research to understand this criminal group internationally seeking to really bring in a form of slavery. Science and Public Policy.org, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to cover a whole host of issues as Lord Monckton briefs us on the open collapse of the carbon tax area of the fake green movement. But first, sir, and of course they're regrouping, we'll talk about that. Tell us about the success of your trip in Australia. I, every day, tuned in to video clips of you on radio and TV, in debates, packed houses everywhere, hands down, trouncing the opposition, and you could see in their eyes no longer that arrogant false aplomb, that chutzpah. Now They look like beaten men.
They are in galloping retreat. It was very interesting. I mean, I arrived in Australia. Nobody there had heard of me, but there was a really good PR guy who came to see me the day I landed. He said, right, we've laid on a program for you to start going into studios. The moment that began, then I was rushing from studio to studio, got massive coverage on all the major channels, all the major newspapers, even the left-wing ones couldn't resist having a go at me, as it were. Then on our first speaker meeting, which was in the largest ballroom in Sydney, which seats 1,000 people, we were absolutely full. People had began queuing at 10 in the morning for a meeting that began at 5:30 in the afternoon. And they were queuing down 3 floors of the hotel, right round the grand staircase and out into the street outside. We had to turn several hundred people away, unfortunately. Absolutely extraordinary interest. And this happened all over Australia. We went to the working class district of Newcastle in the Hunter Valley, which is the coal mining area. And we had a small room booked in the town hall. We had to abandon that and go into the main town hall building itself, which seats 1,000. Then we had to open the gallery, which seats another few hundred. And even then we had to turn people away. Same thing happened in Brisbane. We had a debate there, which I think the other side reckoned we won it by a country mile. Then we had a meeting at the Irish Club there. They had never seen so many people in that club as they saw that day. 700 of them jammed into the room. Then we went up to Noosa, where the deputy leader of the opposition in Parliament turned up to hear me, and he ended up outside not being able to get in, along with 250 people, because that too was packed out. So I had an impromptu meeting in the car park to cope with them. Then we went down to Melbourne, same thing, absolutely packed out, a ballroom seating 1,000, absolutely full. Then we went up to Canberra, and the press club could only seat 300, and we turned at least as many as that away. Then we went down to Adelaide, same thing happened there. We had an overflow room, that was full as well. We had to go and speak in both rooms. Then we went up to Perth, where they had to lay on not only an overflow room, but an overflow meeting the following day, because 2,000 people wanted to hear me speak. And as we went around Australia, the crowds got bigger and also got younger. More and more younger people beginning to come to hear the truth about the climate. So a quite extraordinary, overwhelming response. As a result of which, I got to meet the leader of the opposition, Tony Abbott, who, if you remember, won office as leader of the opposition over Malcolm Turnbull, his rival, who had previously supported Australia's attempt to have a carbon trading sort of cap and tax scheme like that which the Democrats in America want. And Turnbull was defeated by his own party, and Tony Abbott, who is skeptical about climate change, has taken over, the first politician to win office, because he doesn't believe this nonsense. So it was a very good time we had in Australia. Very, very receptive audiences. 500 mentions of the tour in the media, both print and electronic. According to the people who invited me there, 2 retired engineers from Noosa who organized the whole thing and paid for it out of their own pockets, fortunately. And we made the money back by the huge crowds that turned up, all paying their $20 to hear me talk. But it was an astonishing event. They said that this has actually changed the opinion in Australia. Now, why has it done that? Not because I'm a brilliant speaker, but because people were absolutely desperate to hear the other side of the story, which they couldn't get in the mainstream news media, because the mainstream news media won't even give you the fact. They won't even tell you that global warming over the last 15 years hasn't been happening in any statistically significant sense. That has now, at last, been publicly admitted by Phil Jones, who's the head of the now deposed and disgraced head of the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia. He's been chucked out because he was caught trying to suppress and tamper with and hide and even destroy scientific data. And the ClimateGate emails that got released by a whistleblower that have been all around the web did for him. But he was then interviewed by a sympathetic BBC interviewer who nevertheless got in touch with me first and said, what questions should I ask? And I said, one thing you should ask is ask him whether there has been any statistically significant global warming for the last 15 years. And Phil Jones, albeit through gritted teeth, had to admit what he had never before ever publicly said. But yes, I've been right all along. There hasn't been any significant global warming for 15 and a half. I mean, that is the most extraordinary admission by somebody who had been pushing out the official line that the most recent decade has been the warmest on the record. Yes, it has, but we still haven't had any significant warming for 15 years.
More mountain.
Now they're beginning to have to tell us the truth, and the media are beginning to have to print the truth, having concealed it from their own readers for a long time. And I think that's the value of the Australian tour, because it's made the Australian media and many others around the world realize that by deliberately suppressing the facts that don't happen to fit their chosen storyline about the alarming, dreadful, supposed global warming problem, they are not doing their readers any favor. They've now got to start at least giving the facts. Whatever the opinions they may like to have is another matter, but they must now do their job and give us the proper, unbiased, scientific facts. Because if they don't, then, as I said many times, because everywhere I went I was asked this question, what about the mainstream media? I said it's quite simple. If they go on refusing to give you the facts, and you have to turn to Alex Jones and the electronic, the radio shock jock and the internet to get your news because the mainstream television and newspapers won't give you the facts, then the mainstream television and newspapers will lose audiences and they will go bust one by one, and deservedly so.
And they are going bust.
I was cheered to the echo.
And they are going bust. I mean, the points you make raise so many other issues. But the bottom line is you are a brilliant speaker because you've done the research. You've been right for 20 years. You recognized more than 20 years ago the danger of this criminal enterprise, this criminal cult. You know, we have the head climatologist for NASA saying destroy industrialized society. We have Maurice Strong saying destroy industrialized society. And just like in Russia or in Nazi Germany, when you suppress the truth, it explodes with even more force. But expanding on that, we see the global battle against this fraud. Every time we do stand up and take action, we have success, and nothing succeeds like success. And so now that we have lost this feeling of helplessness, and we now have the true spirit of empowerment, the rout is intensifying, and they've recognized that they're bald-faced denying and stonewalling and ignoring ClimateGate for 2 weeks entirely, and Newsweek saying it's a conspiracy theory, ClimateGate didn't even happen. This is only further destroying them, Lord Monckton, as you know. So how do you see this shaking out now? How do you see them counter-striking? They haven't spent, as you know, hundreds of billions of dollars financing this takeover to go quietly into the night.
No, I think that's very well put. They're going to want to make sure that having invested all this time and effort, and of course it's not their money they've spent, it's your money they've spent. It's the taxpayers' money they've spent on furthering this scare. Of course they're going to want to get their dividend in the way of closing down the Western economies, but I don't think that's now going to happen. I think that financial recession hasn't helped them. It began, really, the rot when the financial recession set in and people began thinking, you know, do we really believe this climate stuff? Because it's going to be very expensive if we do. And then came ClimateGate, then came the cold Northern Hemisphere winter. In fact, interestingly, the January temperatures worldwide were the highest since satellite records began 32 years ago, because there's an El Nino going on, and so sea temperatures are very much higher than they would normally be. And interestingly, we think that that may be caused by undersea volcanic activity in the eastern Pacific, nothing whatever to do with global warming caused by us. So gradually all these facts about how the climate really works are beginning to come out, and the media can no longer suppress them. And so what I think the usual suspects are going to do now is they're going to realize that trying to maintain these endless scare stories about the climate when the climate simply isn't warming as they had predicted that it would is not going to work. So what they're going to do instead, I think, is to go quiet for a bit, and they'll beaver away at local level rather than at national level, because at last national level we are watching. And we will stop them. And you've got wonderful organizations like Fox News. Now, how has that done so well? It's done well because it does give you, on this and on so many other subjects, the fact that the mainstream news media otherwise won't give because they've become so politicized. They're all effectively Marxist or totalitarian anyway in the way they look at things. And Fox News is simply saying, well, we will give the fact. And so half, or just about half now, of the entire television news audience watches Fox News because otherwise it won't get the fact. And so
Lord Monckton,
I've recently just been reading, for instance, a remarkably stupid piece in the Salt Lake Tribune, which is an extreme left-wing paper, which absolutely hates the administration there, which has, as you may know, passed a resolution saying global warming is nonsense and we're not going to spend any more money on it. That's the Utah State Legislature has been the first to break ranks and say we're not having any more of this nonsense. And the local newspaper is absolutely furious. And so it rang up a scientist and got a quote, every single point of which was a lie. So I wrote to the reporter concerned and said, what on earth do you think you're doing? Why don't you ask this so-called scientist whether he has qualifications in climatology, paleoclimatology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, and various other subjects on which he was claiming to be an authority because of the statements he made, every single one of which was wrong. It turned out he wasn't any kind of climate scientist at all. And this is the trouble. They just go to the people they know will sing the song they want to hear rather than going to the people who actually know what the truth is. And these local news media and these local administrations are definitely a pain, and they're going to have to be dealt with and dealt with very firmly. The way we've done this in the past in the United Kingdom, where you get a tough-minded, conservatively-minded government in office, is actually to circumscribe their powers so that they are forbidden to spend money on things like global warming. You actually just tell them that is out with their powers to do that. And if you do that, I know it's harder in the States to do that than it is in the UK, but you can nevertheless constrain quite a bit what they spend the money on. And the other thing is that now that the people are beginning to realise what rubbish this all is and how much it's going to cost them, and in particular that it's going to cost working people because they spend a bigger proportion on electricity and gasoline than everybody else, they are the ones that are going to get hurt by this. It doesn't matter what Henry Waxman or Ed Markey say about how they're going to compensate them. The fact is, if they compensate them, then their bill won't make any difference to carbon emissions. If they don't compensate them, then it's their own voters that are going to lose. Either way, an ETS is just madness. Any kind of emissions trading scheme, cap and trade, call it what you like, is now doomed. And I think there's no way they'll get that through the Senate. And I don't think the likes of Schwarzenegger and all those characters in California are going to get away with doing what they're doing, which is say we're going to impose at state level taxes that are no longer going to be imposed at federal level. If they try that, then people will leave. And already there's a kind of wagon train no longer heading west, heading east, back out of California, with businesses getting out of California because California hates business. And in the end, the governor is going to run out of money, because he'd have driven all the businesses away that used to pay the taxes that kept him in clover.
Now, Lord Monckton,
they will learn in the end that they can't get away with this, that the people will vote with their feet and get out of local administrations or state administrations that try to impose extra global warming taxes now that we know that global warming, as Henry Ford might have put it, is bunk.
Yes, and continuing along that line and understanding that they're going to come back at us, the state of Texas has announced they are moving to pass laws against cities, because you can't have cities operating outside state laws. The cities and counties are chartered by the state and under its constitution. And we have everybody, literally millions, moving every few years out of California, mainly to Texas. That's why the UN lobbyists are here in Austin. This is the big battleground. They're trying to hurry and pass it this month or next month. They were going to pass it in about 6 months. They're in a hurry. And I agree with you. They're now saying, okay, you win. It's not real. Go back to sleep. You won. Because they know now that when they give us a fight back, that we know we're winning. So that only energizes the people to take action. So they're going to play possum, and they're going to call it green jobs. Now, they've always done that to a certain extent, but they now have almost 100% shifted out of saying global warming, we've got to save you, sky is falling, to the economy is dead. Only a green job will save you. But in Australia, in Canada, in Spain, as you know, Pleaser, I'd like you to break it down and give people the actual numbers. Green jobs cost on average two jobs for every job you create. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to fund each low-paying green job, and it doesn't work. It's a boondoggle to their friends and Al Gore and others that own large stakes in the select green companies that the counties, cities, and states are forced with the federal money to purchase these systems from.
That's exactly right. And, of course, what you're talking about there, that two jobs destroyed for every one created, that's what's known as the Friedman factor. He won the Nobel Prize for economics for pointing out that if the state, the taxpayer, is made to pay to create a job, every job that's created will destroy two jobs in the private sector. And that's why you have to keep the public sector small. And, of course, the this green jobs argument is just another socialistic or communistic or totalitarian way of expanding the state-funded, publicly funded jobs and destroying the private sector as they go. And, of course, Democrats are always willing to do that because they know that most corporations don't vote Democrat. They don't like to contribute to the Democrats, and therefore they would rather shut down corporate America because they think they will gain political advantage by doing it. They don't care if they drive your nation bankrupt. And, of course, green jobs, as I said in front of the Energy and Commerce Committee of Congress and the Ways and Means Committee, I said the same to both of them. I said green jobs are the new unemployment. If you want to create unemployment, the fastest way to do it is for taxpayers to be made to subsidize these boondoggles, as you have so rightly called them. There is no economic basis for wind farms, nor is there an environmental
basis. But it gives incredible power to the government to give their friends and families and others the money. And we have Obama, we have Pachauri, for those that don't know, the former or current head of the IPCC, and others, all openly making, Al Gore, masses of money off of this. And specifically, not only that Nobel Prize winning paper on the fact that government destroys jobs, for every job it creates, it kills at least two. We know in Spain, this is in Bloomberg, their own government admits, every green job destroyed two jobs and cost additional money on top of that. And we have England shutting down its steelworks, paying to move it to Pachauri's own steelworks that he owns. I mean, this is criminal on its face. This is as criminal as a mugger bashing an old woman's head in with a hammer and robbing her. This is as illegal as a serial killer kidnapping children. I mean, this is...
Just give you, take that Red Car Steelworks thing. There was a report about that at last on BBC television today. They've been almost sullenly silent about it. And they mentioned it today. And did they mention that this was because Europe has an emissions trading scheme and carbon cap and trade, and India doesn't, and that's why the Indian steelworks that owns the Red Car Steelworks is moving it to India, and that that Indian steelworks is the one that employs Pachauri. None of that was made plain. They just said it was world economic factors that were causing, you know, world economic slowdown that was causing that steelworks to shut. It wasn't. It was that we've got cap and trade, and India hasn't. And our jobs are being exported to India, where precisely the same steelwork is going to be built, employing precisely the same number of people. So there will be absolutely no benefit to the planet whatsoever, but quite unnecessarily, we will have destroyed 1,700 British jobs. And none of the major political parties has said sorry to these hard-working steelworkers in Redcar who have lost their jobs. Not one. They have sat on their hands and said nothing as these people are thrown out of work.
But the good news is, all over the country, people are recognizing what this is. Of course, the provision they've now passed in Utah, we have him coming up in the next hour, the state rep that actually introduced the bill, and he has rightfully said, this is a eugenics operation, this is a population reduction move, this is a plan to deindustrialize the West All he's doing is quoting from the UN, quoting from the very people that set this up.
Quoting from Maurice Strong, who said 25 years ago that he was setting up the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change as an intergovernmental rather than a scientific panel, precisely so that it could be transmogrified into a world government one day. That's what he said. Jacques Chirac said some years ago that he wanted the world government to come out of the U.S. climate.
Lord Monckton, stay there. We got a break. Let's come back and cover world government and all the other scandals with ClimateGate. ScienceandPublicPolicy.org is his website. Our websites, of course, are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. My film, Fall of the Republic, and the Obama deception detail from their own documents, the UN's own admissions, White House officials, how they want to destroy our industrial base. They think we eat too much, we have swimming pools, too many cars, too many children. These are control freaks. Lord Monckton is a champion of freedom who's been fighting these people for more than two decades, and now it is paying off big time because of his steadfastness, his dogged determination, and many others. Now, sir, you got cut off by the break. You were getting into all these world leaders calling for global governance and saying the keystone, the cornerstone of this is the phony environmental movement. Continue.
Yes, that's right. These people have been using the environmental movement as a way of advancing political objectives that have nothing whatsoever to do with the environment. We're dealing with Marxists who piled out of the Berlin Wall and into the environmental movement, and a very great friend of ours, Eric Ellington, who was one of the founders of Greenpeace, who sadly died just 2 days ago. He left Greenpeace shortly after he founded it because so many of these people had come in and taken the organization over for purposes that had nothing whatever to do with protecting the environment and were all about achieving political objectives that were bitterly and wickedly hostile to the interests of the West. So this has really been a very, very sad business that the genuine environmental movement has been almost entirely captured now by people who hate the West and who hate success, who hate industry, who hate humanity, who rightly said before the break, they are there to try to get humanity to be killed in its billions. They would like to reduce the population, some of them have said, to just 1 billion instead of the 7 billion it's coming up to at the moment. They say that any more than that and we're encroaching too much on the planet. And they're prepared to use the most draconian methods, including starvation, to achieve their end. And that, of course, is what has happened as a direct result of the global warming scare, because there are millions starving in the third world now, millions more than would otherwise have been starving, because the biofuel scam into which all the foolish governments of the world galloped in the name of saving the planet has taken millions of acres of agricultural land out of growing food for people who needed it, and now it's growing biofuels for clunkers that don't, making Al Gore and various absolute bankers very, very rich, and making the rest of us very poor, and more importantly, putting food prices up by double in the last couple of years.
And by the way, this is not rhetoric. I mean, these are admitted facts. They want to starve people. They want to control the wealth. They want to set up a planetary tyranny. Expanding on that, you, of course, have called out Al Gore many times. I would like you to do that again today. You've called for criminal investigations. These guys years ago in major papers called for your arrest, called for the death penalty for people that are climate deniers. Cass Sunstein at the White House says he wants to make it illegal. I don't know if you've seen that paper. It only came out in the last month that he wrote a year and a half ago for the Chicago Law School. I mean, they have truly committed the crimes to carry out this fraud. So can you speak to that area? And then secondarily, giant events have taken place, each one bigger than the last, of new frauds, new cooking the books and the thermostat records. I know you know about that, but can you chronicle some of the Glaciergate's and other things that are coming out now on a daily basis. The Met Office...
It is an absolutely extraordinary story, what we're getting. And let's just look at the latest of them, which you probably haven't even heard of yourself because it's so new. The UN's climate panel has underestimated the growth in Antarctic sea ice over the last 30 years by 50%. They've been concentrating on saying, oh, but look how the Arctic sea ice has been diminishing. Well, it has, but the Antarctic sea ice has been increasing almost as much. And yet you'd never know it.
Hold on, hold on. Hold your horses. I don't mean to interrupt. This is new. Please, sir, tell us where we find this, the admission. This is huge.
Yes, I mean, this is yet another error that's been found. And it you'll find a very good detailed explanation of this at whatsupwiththat.com, which I expect you know quite well. It's a very good website by Anthony Watts. W-A-T-T-S, up with that, all one word, .com. And his lead story at the moment is on what he calls IPCC Gate du Jour, Antarctic sea ice increase underestimated by 50%. He's got the graph. He's shown you how they've bent it. He's got a detailed description of what they did and how they went about it and how dishonest it is. Because, of course, as Arctic sea ice extent has declined, Antarctic sea ice has increased to match it. And so global sea ice extent hasn't changed at all. You'd not know that if you read the media. But let's just go through some of the other errors that have come to light. We'll start with the one that I spotted when the 2007 fourth assessment report of the UN Climate Panel, the IPCC, came out. Now, that they've done four of these big assessment reports. That's the most recent one. On the day it came out, I saw that the bureaucrats had put in a graph, a table of figures, rather, that hadn't been in the original document. And so I protested and said, by the way, this doesn't even add up to within a factor of two of the total you've put at the bottom of this new table. And also, you've multiplied by 10 the observed contributions to sea level rise of not only the Greenland, but also the Antarctic land-based ice sheet. And I said, that's outrageous. You have no basis putting in, as bureaucrats, tables of figures like this, which the scientists haven't seen and haven't signed off on.
And on the piece of paper, it's all wrong. And on the piece of paper, it's all wrong. A 10-year-old in math class could tell it was a fraud. I mean, they're so shoddy. I mean, take Glacier Gate from the Himalayas, where they used a mountaineering student's photos and a cell phone call saying, looks like the ice is disappearing, as their scientific proof.
That's right, and they didn't bother to talk to Professor Bhatt of the Indian Geological Survey, who's kept me briefed on the Himalayan glaciers for years, and he has said all along, and he's now been proven right, that there's absolutely no basis for the idea that all that ice will be gone in 25 years. He says there's no danger of it going anywhere. And we also know that the lead author of the chapter of the IPCC's report that said this was going to disappear in 25 years, this Himalayan ice, he said that he knew that figure was wrong, but he left it in there because he wanted to influence government. In other words, it's yet another deliberate lie. It's like Al Gore saying sea level is going to rise imminently by 20 feet. And we know he knows that's a lie because he buys himself a condo feet from the ocean at Fisherman's Wharf the same year he's making the film in which he tells the lie. It's that kind of thing where we're now catching them out, not only telling the lies, but pretty much admitting that they're lying deliberately for the sake of exerting a political influence on government rather than just reporting the science correctly.
And that's
what
key.
They should be doing. And that's not all. I mean, if you look at the other ones, we've had African agriculture was going to be destroyed by climate change. They've now had to admit that, in fact, even 2 or 3 Celsius of warming, which we aren't going to see, but even if we did, it would be highly beneficial to African agriculture. It would lead to a further increase.
Schwarzenegger says they're going to lose. Schwarzenegger says they're going to lose all the grapes for wine in California. Just asinine lies.
Well, actually, they are because they've lost them to frost a couple of years running. They've had exceptional frost in California. It's been very bad for all the grapes and the fruit crops generally down there. The orange crops have been damaged as well. He's had the citrus crops had a hard time there. But that's because of global cooling, not because of global warming. Then we had the story about the Amazon rainforest. 40%, they said, were going to disappear because of global warming. That turned out to be made up by a campaigner for the Worldwide Fund for Nature, another of these wretched environmental groups run by communists, funded by communist governments overseas. They have sovereign wealth, the like of which you and I will never see. Then we had them saying that 66% of Holland would be underwater, when in fact only 26% of it is below sea level. Then they said that there was going to be damage from extreme weather events. Now they've had to admit that there's no basis for that whatsoever. Then they said there were going to be more hurricanes because of global warming, and they were warned by the resignation of the one of the lead authors of that chapter that they mustn't go on saying that. They went on saying it anyway. Now that's been turned out to have been written by a journalist from a Marxist newspaper in Britain, not by a scientist. And day after day, new revelations come out. I confronted Pachauri with another one of these in Copenhagen, because the headline graph in the entire 2007 assessment report of the UN was a graph showing that the rate of increase in temperatures has itself been accelerating over the last 150 years, with the implication stated in the report in three different places that it was we who had caused this acceleration in warming. In fact, there hasn't been an acceleration in the warming rate. That whole thing is entirely bogus. They used a statistical technique that I was taught not to use in Statistics 101. They had no basis for using this cheap trick, which conceals the fact that there's been no significant increase in temperature whatsoever, that the rate of warming that we saw over the last 30 years is exactly consistent with rates of warming we've seen between 1860 and 1880 and again between 1910 and 1940.
So we know it's a natural cycle.
Period where we couldn't have had any effect on temperature. I confronted Pachauri with this, and I gave him 2 days to withdraw that graph, apologize, cease to use it in his own lectures, get it taken out of the IPCC's documents. Otherwise, I said I would report him for fraud. He didn't get in touch. I've reported him for fraud. He is now being investigated.
All right. Now, that brings me to my next question. The fraud goes on forever, and the UN, the media, the spammers that come on our websites, they repeat the same thing. You are liars. We have thousands of peer-reviewed studies, but then all those studies are based on UN-collected and private environmental group-collected data that every time you spot-check it is a premeditated fraud, not an error. And they've spent hundreds of billions globally, as you know, pushing this, Lord Monckton. And so my question to you is, doesn't there need to be criminal charges on thousands of people and hundreds of organizations if we're truly going to rout these people? Justice be done. May the heavens fall.
All you need to do is to pick on one or two who have plainly overstepped the line. Because remember that fraud, like any serious imprisonable criminal offense, is one which has, quite rightly, a very high standard of proof. You have to be able to prove that the person committing the fraud was either grossly negligent and therefore looked the other way when he was cheating people, or was deliberately cheating them. And unless you can prove one of those two things and prove that what he did involved other people in losses and prove that what he did involved him in gaining at their expense, if you can't prove all that, you can't prove a fraud. So what I would do is I would pick out, for instance, Pachauri. Let's take him as an example. Now, he is a trustee of a charity in the United Kingdom called TERI-Europe. That's the Tata Industries Energy Research Institute for Europe. Now, Tata Industries, just to get this clear, they are the people who closed down the steelworks at Redcar, costing 1,700 of our workers their job over the next 3 months. That's who Tata Industries are. They have a charity in the United Kingdom called TERI-Europe. It is registered with our charity commission, which requires it to file accurate accounts every year. Now, for the last 3 years, it hasn't filed any accounts because it has made declarations to the charity commission that it received in each of those years less than 10,000 sterling in income. However, I found on a government website a statement saying that that particular charity had been paid £30,000 in just one of those 3 years in income to do a particular job for the government, and that income was not disclosed to the charity commission. And on further investigation, it turns out that several hundred thousand pounds of income each year has not been declared, and they've therefore got away with hiding from the charity commission when where it is that they're getting their money from. They're getting it, in fact, largely from British government taxpayer sources.
So, but sir, you're saying then it's like getting Al Capone on tax evasion. Let me throw out a few other names then. Phil Jones.
This one, first of all, that means Pachauri, whose job as a trustee is to file accurate accounts, is now going to face criminal prosecution in the United Kingdom for false accounting, which is a serious, imprisonable criminal offence. He has been dodging his obligation as a trustee, and two English trustees have now got themselves reclassified as not being trustees so as to leave him alone in the frame. And the police are now going to go after them too for trying to get themselves reclassified as not being trustees. It's a very, very murky business, this. And what we're now doing is we're looking at the financial vested interest of several of the scientists and Al Gore types and businessmen and politicians who are advocating this stuff. And we're finding wherever we look that they have financial links with organized crime, financial links with huge corporations that are making money out of carbon trading and banks and so forth. Al Gore was on the board of Lehman Brothers. They were trying to corner the market in carbon trading. They were so busy doing that they didn't look to their main business, and they deservedly went bust. But these people, there are links everywhere to huge financial vested interests and a great deal of criminal activity. If you look, for instance, at the European carbon trading scheme that's been running for several years, a recent report by the European Court of Auditors shows that 90% of all transactions on the European carbon market are fraudulent transactions. Now, I knew this would happen because it's blindingly obvious. If you set up a carbon trading scheme, then not only both parties to any carbon trading transaction, but also the regulators have a joint vested interest in exaggerating the scale and quantity of the transaction.
Incredible. So you have the people.
The whole thing from top to bottom is a serious financial fraud.
Okay, so we go after Pachauri, we go after Gore. What about somebody like Phil Jones, who gets all these millions of dollars or pounds in research funding, the head facility, and we have the emails where he's hiding the decline? I mean, that's...
Well, the first thing that happened there is that the Information Commissioner's Office, which I asked to look into Jones' activities, first of all, failed to reply to my letter at all. I'm going to have to sue them to make them do their job and answer my letter. But they then issued a public statement saying that the law prevented them from prosecuting Jones because he would have had to have been done within 6 months of the offence first being drawn to their attention. Well, in fact, they got the law wrong, but they still decided they're not going to do anything about it. And I think what we're going to find is that the prosecuting authorities, which are, of course, directed by exactly the same governments that are themselves profiting by this fraud, are going to be told by those governments to look the other way. However, in England and Wales, and I think in some states of the US too, the individual citizen has a right to prosecute if the state fails to do so.
Incredible.
I think that what's now going to happen is that some of these crooks are going to be prosecuted by individuals where the state won't do its job.
Okay, Lord Monckton, we've got one more quick segment. An hour goes by so fast with you. I've got a bunch of other key questions. Well, it's our final segment with Lord Christopher Monckton. We have a state representative who just got a law rammed through saying no to the global warming takeover. Texas is doing the same thing. That's all coming up. Lord Monckton, let's talk about how this is going to end, how this plays out. But first, I want to throw the caveat out. I know a lot of your Tories in England are still going along with the environmental fraud. The NFL is pushing it here in the U.S. We see Newt Gingrich doing it. Rupert Murdoch, other than Fox, on his entertainment shows, brags that they implant messages about the green economy and global warming being real. So you say that we're winning this, and I agree with you. My problem is if we don't keep the battle hot and real and focused, it'll just kind of fade away, and they'll just regroup and come back. But how do you see this successfully ending?
There's always a danger of that, but I think we can now hope that because their activities have actually been criminal, we can just land one or two prosecutions. Pachauri, for instance, is going to be prosecuted because the accounts were plainly not correctly filed. He plainly knew as a trustee that he had a job to make sure the accounts were right. He didn't do that job. He was at best negligent, at worst deliberately fraudulent. Either way, it's a serious imprisonable criminal offense, and he is going to be prosecuted, even if I have to prosecute him myself. And I know the public authorities here, because they're so much in the pockets of the governing class, won't lift a finger against any of these people, however much they commit fraud, but I am not going to tolerate it, and there are many others here who are not going to tolerate it. So whether they like it or not, these people who have lorded it over and have corruptly taken money from the pockets of the poor to pay for their own $1,000 suits, which is what Pachauri usually wears, and their lavish lifestyles in the smartest suburbs of Delhi, that is now going to come to an end, and the lifestyle of Pachauri is going to be, for a very long time, behind bars in a smelly Indian jail for the fraud in three successive years of deliberately filing false accounts in his charity in the UK so that we couldn't tell just how much money the British taxpayer was paying to keep him and his cronies in clover.
And to interrupt, everything you've predicted has come true so far. I mean, I really hope this is going to happen. How do we make sure this happens?
We make sure it happens by looking out for any other activities that are fraudulent, by environmental groups telling lies about the climate and profiting by doing so. All of that is fraudulent. All of that is prosecutable. Indeed, under the RICO statute in the United States, some of these environmental groups could be shut down because they've been lying systematically for years and years and years.
And destroying people's businesses.
People for doing so.
They've been hurting people, too.
They have indeed, and they've been endangering people by stopping new coal-fired power stations from being built, by stopping new nuclear power stations from being built, by protesting every time people wanted a new power station. Jobs are already being lost.
They're a mafia you've got to buy protection from. They also get to choose who they're going to mess with, who they're not.
Exactly. And I think just one or two of those people taken to court and prosecuted for criminal fraud by workers who've lost their jobs in that aluminum smelter that closed down recently in the States because it could no longer buy electricity because the grid is running out. Those people have a good case to take these greenies to court. And all you've got to do is land a couple of them in prison, and the rest will run for cover. And more importantly, the people who are now credulously paying the money will stop paying them any, because they are just fraudsters.
So you're saying, Lord Monckton, we haven't even begun to see the routing of these people because they were so bold, they've committed so many crimes, that this could discredit collectivism even worse than it did in the Soviet Union.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think the left, by nailing their colors to the mast of this particular rapidly sinking ship, are going to find themselves they're not going to find it easy to free themselves from their entanglement with the top hamper of this sinking ship.
Lord Monckton, we're out of time.
This could be the end of the left.
God bless you.